We should have come out with Loretta Lynn music, because every time I hear Loretta Lynch, I'm thinking Loretta Lynn.
She's a legend.
Wendy, she is a legend. Who is that voice? It's not Bill Left, because the voice is not cracking. It is me, Wendy Snyder, and Dane Neal is sitting in for Bill Left for the first half of the show today.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here, so thanks, Wendy, for having us. And kudos to you. I heard the promo this morning, working a little blue on the promo, calling Dean Richards, who's coming up later, and I the double D's.
Yeah, but that's not accurate. I exaggerated, okay. Like most men do. Okay. I did myself with the promo.
All right.
Not a double D, but that's okay. Hillary Clinton, we were talking about this off the air. Are we doing an over and under bet on what's going to be announced here? Attorney General Loretta Lynch will accept FBI's findings in Hillary Clinton email investigation. Will there be an indictment? Will there not be an indictment? I'm saying no.
Well, you would think in a normal everyday world, no, because it's an attorney general of the same party. And you had said it before, like, well, really, what's the big deal? I don't know that. I mean, they've proven that something may have not been done the way that it should have been. But can they prove exactly what happened or whether
did
there was,
it breach any security here?
I don't know that they can do that. So in a normal world, no. But now with the whole, I don't know, what would you call it? The plane visit gate where Bill like somehow came. She almost, and the timing is a little curious, right? That she has to come out today, diffuse it in some way, either say no or either say, I will not be tainted by the charm of a Bill Clinton. You know, she's going to get indicted.
You think maybe she will?
I don't know. This is one of those really up in the air things.
How does Bill Clinton see? You know, I shouldn't say this. I love the fact that there's going to be a woman president someday. Maybe it's this election. Maybe it's not. I wish it was a fresh face and most importantly, a fresh name. I'm serious.
It is the strangest thing. And if this would have happened back in 2008, I know that there was a lot of, I guess, more focus or excitement over the whole first woman president thing. But she's been around for such a long time and she's almost outgrown. This doesn't make any sense. Almost outgrown her gender, right? She is just Hillary Clinton, this iconic person that we know, you know, in the political world and kind of in the pop culture world. So it's almost, and then you've got the approval ratings. Like, people just don't seem to be super excited about, maybe it was some other woman.
That's what I mean. That's what, you know, being a woman, I want the first female president. That was awesome. First African American president. That was great.
Yeah.
I would like to see it. And I know Hillary Clinton is very qualified for the position. She's a smart woman, but I wish it was a fresh name, not Bush, not Clinton.
Well, and now you have where Bill has inserted himself into the
situation. Don't say that.
Well, I mean, he's...
Don't say inserted himself.
Well, so he's involved in whatever is going on in the news. And think about this from a media standpoint, from a radio standpoint, certainly from a potential humor standpoint, you know, a Bill Clinton first man situation would be pretty funny because you know he would be doing this kind of stuff. He's not just going to come out with a healthy let's do some jumping jacks initiative 2 years in.
Look at my arms,
baby. Look at my
at my guns.
I feel better than ever. Get some tickets to the gun show. You know he's going to be just, and there'll be so much more scrutiny. It'll be a lot of fun, I think, to watch him.
Well, when Bill Clinton joined Loretta Lynch aboard her plane while they were on the tarmac, Lynch said the pair mostly talked about grandchildren and a little golf. I would have loved to have been a little fly in the plane.
So how did it work? So her, I think she was arriving on a plane and he was about to depart on a plane. Was it the same plane? How do you just walk onto a plane? I get it. You're Bill Clinton. You can do what you want. But I mean, was it one of those where he had to, no, it's okay. I'm going to go, you know, was that it?
Ryan, I know, is monitoring the situation right now because Loretta Lynch, Attorney General, will be, I have to think about it when I say
not
it.
The coal miner's daughter.
No.
I didn't know that.
Attorney General Loretta Lynch will be making an announcement soon and holding a press conference. How did the Bill Clinton-Loretta Lynch meeting take place?
Yeah, it sounded like it was just two people in the same spot at the same time, too. You know,
yeah, let me tell you something.
passing ships, I guess, yeah.
You just had him sounding like Hulk Hogan.
I know, I don't do impressions of political people.
But Bill, of course, media's running wild.
Of course, Donald Trump has jumped all over this, though. I mean, he said, and, you know, I'm sure echoing a lot of sentiments from people, is that it's just something you don't do from an ethical standpoint. Speaking about Loretta Lynch, it's something that's unheard of. You know, you've got this investigation going on, and, you know, you're meeting with the husband of the person who's being investigated.
Well, in her defense, in a way, she does have this kind of, whether it's real or just imagined, this kind of buffer, right? She'll accept the recommendations of the group that's going to decide what's going to. So it isn't even really her deciding. It's just basically her forwarding it on. And then how, I mean, from a real person standpoint, this is a person I'm sure in circles they've met many, many times. Do you just ignore him? Look, nope, nope, can't talk. I mean, would you do that? Or would you really? You would really just say, like, hey, what's going on?
And this is the quote from Lynch, by the way. She said, as I was landing, he was headed out. So, you know, it's not like it doesn't seem, at least according to her, as though it was planned. It was just two people in the same spot at the same time.
Yeah, but
high-powered people at that.
I mean, you can't turn him down, but this is bad timing. He should. And you know, having a husband whom I love and adore, you know, I can handle my own business. You know what I mean? So I don't want him to mess up the deal or ruin things or embarrass me, quite honestly.
And you know that's never happened between Bill and Hillary. But no, that's an excellent point, Wendy, is because now Hillary's probably, they're probably fighting it out, saying like,
yep.
Geez, what are you, you know, because.
What were you thinking?
Because now she almost, and we kind of intimated it, she's almost obligated to do something negative so it doesn't look like she was influenced by Bill.
It's a good point. Let's take a quick break because we are awaiting Loretta Lynch speaking, and that should be happening any minute. It is Bill Leff on vacation. It's me, Wendy Snyder, and Dane Neal filling his big squeaky shoes today. They do squeak. He sounds like SpongeBob when he walks down the hall.
Single D.
Single D. It's WGN.
Okay, so it doesn't sound like Loretta Lynch is completely taking herself away from the investigation, Wendy, but we heard there one of the first questions, what on earth was going on when you met with Bill Clinton? She called it the question of the day. By the way, this is a panel discussion going on at an ideas forum in Aspen, Colorado. And so the moderator, I believe, is from MSNBC. She says she fully expects to accept the recommendations. So DOJ is going to do her job, not her directly, investigating the FBI as well. They're going to compile all their information and then bring it to her, and then she will accept whatever it is they have to say. So I guess we're not going to get much information as to yes or no, whether there will be charges at this point, just what her role will be in this process.
Right, which we didn't really learn anything new because she was expected to support the recommendations from prosecutors and other leading probes into this issue.
Nothing to see here, people.
I know,
move
really
along.
I love the relaxedness of it. It wasn't a press conference.
It was a casual setting. We were joking that it was kind of like inside the actor's studio, right? It was like, hey, what's with this crazy Bill stuff? Everyone laughs and then say, like, what were you thinking? You know, and then, you know, Brad Pitt waxes on about his latest movie. So it seemed a little like that. But here, and Ryan too, is, as opposed to recusing yourself from it or saying something like, I am prepared to accept the findings and the recommendations. She said, I fully expect to accept, which means if the outcome is a certain way.
Oh, you're a good listener.
Yeah.
These are all attorneys. They know the wiggle room. They know exactly how to use it. So we'll see what role she plays. It seems to me like she's not incredibly interested in getting her hands involved, but it sounds like it's something that she has to do. So I don't know. We'll see kind of how this whole thing shakes out.
You know, if I had a nickel for every time Bill Clinton was used as an icebreaker, I would be a rich young woman. Well, a rich woman.
The thing is probably, you remember how Cary Grant never said Judy, Judy, Judy? Has Bill Clinton ever really said, hey, baby? I mean, has he ever really said it?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I don't even understand his charisma. I get it. I see. What do I want to say? I understand it. I don't get it. He's very charismatic.
I think it's not something that goes directly to the visual. People think of him as a, you know, and through the years, obviously he's a little bit older now, but a generally, you know, attractive in the conventional sense kind of guy. I got a chance to spend a tiny bit of time with him at the Indianapolis 500, and people just flocked around him like he was a rock star. Certainly he was, you know, beyond his presidency. But I think there's something to him here's the things that I've heard from people who've spent some time with him, is when he remembers everything. So he'll remember your name like years
really?
Later.
Really?
Yeah. And
he is a rock. No, he's not a rock star. They never remember your name.
Right. I'm so sorry.
Or the city sometimes.
Right. But he remembers how many kids you are and whose birthday it is and that kind of stuff. And I guess there's some kind of magical aura when you have a conversation that you're a fan for life once you meet Bill Clinton, from what I'm told.
He is just very charismatic. And, you know, I mean, when he started the whole Rock the Vote campaign, playing the saxophone on MTV, it forever changed things.
His voice is pretty raspy, though. I covered him down at Muhammad Ali's funeral down in Louisville, and he sounded a little slower with the language, a little bit raspy, but, you know, that could be part of the campaign cycle he's on, too.
He's been raspy for quite some time, though. I've noticed that in his voice.
Yeah. Well, And that's
he's a little older too. I mean, let's face it; it's been a while since he left office.
It's what he does. He speaks in public in a lot of those campaign kind of rallies. You have to get emotional there and kind of exert yourself vocally, and yeah, it takes its toll.
I still go back to I don't know how their relationship is on a personal front with Hillary and Bill, but I had said this before, and I still kind of feel
really
it sometime. You know, is he going? Damn it, I was the president, and now she's going to be the president.
I think he's already had, this is just a guess, is he's already had all those experiences. I think he's going to enjoy all of the access and the accoutrements of the presidency.
Yeah, true.
He's going to be living in the house, flying in Air Force One.
I'm back,
baby, without any of the obligations or pressure. You know,
I did it first.
He'll be able to be the first dude.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Yeah. Is that what they're now going to call it?
There's never been a first dude before, so I guess he would still be... Oh, we still got an election to get through, though. Let's not start measuring the drapes yet.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with this election. And again, just do your homework and vote with your heart. That's all I'm telling you, because I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. It's a big world out there. Just vote. That's all I want to say.
Do you think that there will be some kind of last-minute... late, you know, Green Party, extra write-in candidate, any kind of extra thing that could, you know, it certainly wouldn't be someone that would win, but would skew it one side or the other by taking up votes from either the Republican or the Democrats?
I don't know. It's so divisive. You either love Trump or you hate Hillary. You know, there's no middle ground, it seems, but I don't know. I think it's too late to make a big effort if someone does come in. Maybe not too late for them to enter, although very late, but is anybody going to vet them quick enough to cast a vote that way?
Or like you said, no one cares. It's anybody but. It's like, yeah. Come on, just show up. There's room at the table.
All right, Dane Neal is in for Bill Leff. We shall see what we shall see. Coming up after the news, we are going to talk to a young woman who has created this app that helps to prevent bullying. I had read about it. I was intrigued about it, and we're going to find out all about it. After the news, it's Wendy Snyder. It's Dane Neal in for Bill Leff at 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff is celebrating his 25th wedding anniversary, and if Bill was here, he'd say, Terry's a very lucky girl. So I'll just say that for him. Dane Neal is sitting in his chair today, and I thank you for that.
Terry's a very lucky girl.
Yeah, go ahead. And our next guest, I saw this written up on DNAinfo.com, and bullying is out there all over the place, and there's honestly no way to avoid it. I feel very sorry for kids today. Dane, you and I were talking. My kids are a little older than yours. I have teenage boys. You don't even know what's about to happen.
And but I'm terrified about the great unknown, because I know a little bit about like some of the challenges that you can have. But now in this day and age, there's not even any way that you can, you know, go back and say, here's what happened, because the landscape on technology, social media, it's changing every day. And like, we are really kind of just left out in the cold as far as knowing what's going on.
And I have a theory, which we'll talk about with our guest, that social media today gives you a platform to be mean to someone, which I think translates into real life now. It's like people learn to be mean when they don't agree with somebody. Maisha Levon in the studio with us. It's so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
You have to get right into that microphone. Here's why we're talking to you today. Freshman year of high school, take us back a little bit. Not a very pleasant time for you?
No, it wasn't. And when I actually think back to high school, it's kind of mixed emotions, because I had moments where I was bullied, and it wasn't the best time, because not only was I not standing up for myself, but no one else was, you know, standing up to say, you know, she needs help or this isn't right. And it that happens a lot in high schools and elementary schools, where you have a situation where someone is being bullied and you see it And then you have issues where you're being bullied yourself and you don't know how to stand up for yourself and say, I need help.
Listen, everyone has a conscience and a heart inside. And if they see someone being picked on for a terrible reason, I really think the majority of people want to help. Sometimes they can't help. Say you're hanging around with a group of kids that's bullying someone, and you're sitting there watching this. It takes a big man or a big woman to stand up and say, hey, don't do that to him, because then you may get bullied. So is it like bullying by association sometimes?
Well, like you said, it takes a big woman or a big man to stand up and say this isn't right. But when you're dealing with someone who is not a man or a woman, you're dealing with a child or a teenager, it's not really the same mindset. You know, they have a lot to deal with as a repercussion of reporting it, just as they would to deal with it if they were being bullied on their own.
See, that's kind of, I think that's the important part of it. Some of the obvious choices that we as parents, or at a 10,000 foot view, those kids just don't have at their disposal, right? Because there's repercussions. It'll cause much more problems down the road if they tattle on them. Or maybe they'll
put want to be a snitch.
Yeah, maybe they'll put themselves in harm's way, or they're trying to figure their own way in the kind of the social scene of the school. And so even the obvious choices, they just aren't available.
So you have come up with an app. It's a free app.
Yes.
And it's helpful because this is a way of reporting bullying to school officials without letting anyone know you've done it.
Right. The school can choose a faculty member, be it a counselor or dean or a principal, to create an admin name, and then they share it with the school. So if the school wants to... If the student wants to report a bullying situation, they can report it. If they're being bullied and they want to kind of report it for themselves and they're afraid to walk in and say something, they can do that. You know, it gives them a chance. It gives them a lifeline to let them know that they're not alone in the situation that they're in.
I know I have one teenage boy in high school, and they have a lot of parent meetings at the beginning of the year, and they say, we have a bully hotline. If something's going on, you can call. But I think sometimes you're scared to even do that. So is this completely anonymous? Can you just say, here's a kid who's been bullying me, and then does the school official look into it? Is that how this works?
Right. It is completely anonymous. If the student does not want to disclose who they are, they do not have to register with their real name. They can pick an alias name. If they choose their real name, if they feel they're that courageous, they can do that as well. No one will know who they are until they're ready for someone to know who they are.
And they don't necessarily have to say, hey, it's me that's being bullied. They could say, I saw someone bullying so-and-so. You know, can you monitor that situation? Because sometimes those kids, and Maisha, during the break, you were talking about, as technology goes forward, like the kids, our kids, are ramped up just in their ability to handle these things. Our two-year-old knows how to work the iPad, or she's four now, but she's been using it since she was two. And you had mentioned even seven-year-olds being bullied have committed suicide or tried to commit suicide. So it's nice to be able to use that technology on the good side, too.
And, you know, there are some cases, if a kid is bullied at school, is the school responsible? I'm sorry, it happens a lot in between classes where teachers are unaware of it. I mean, you cannot protect every kid at every moment,
right.
And sometimes they're unaware of it. Sometimes it's in the schoolyard on the way home. So this is a great way to help.
Right. A teacher or a faculty member cannot be everywhere at one time. So this gives them a way to know if something's going to happen that they were unaware of.
All right. When I mentioned that social media today, including texts that we get in the studio, people are yes, there's a phone number. We can, call them back if necessary. And on Facebook, you typically know who somebody is, but it gives you this bravado to say something totally negative to someone because you're not doing it to their face.
Right.
Do you think that this meanness online and on social media is now translating to saying, well, I'm just going to tell them to their face, you're stupid, you're fat, you have bad hair?
I definitely think social...
I'd be a bad bully, by the way. You know, that would not be the best.
I'm having a bad day now.
I definitely think social platforms give people a shield to feel like they can be a little bit more verbally, mentally, and emotionally abusive than they would be in person. And that can sometimes translate in good and bad ways when they get to school. You know, because now you're dealing with being bullied virtually, and now you're dealing with being bullied physically at school. So now you're getting it twice.
It's too much to handle. I mean, it was so easy, you know, I'm in my very early 50s. And when I was in school, we didn't have to worry about this that much. I mean, there was always a kid who was picked on, and I really did try to stick up and defend those kids. But it's worse now. The peer pressure to, like, oh, really? You're sticking up for the weakling? It gets mean out there.
Right.
It's not just girls either that get bullied. Although, do you think girls get bullied in a different way than boys do?
I think girls can get bullied in a different way, but it's equally as serious for a boy as it is for a girl. You know, for a girl, it may be something that's more more physical, more vindictive, more you might be more unaware of it when it's a girl. You know, a girl's bullying can go a little bit deeper than a guy's. It can be physical. It can be because of her body. You know, with a guy, it could be something that's just a little bit more of a hostile situation where it kind of just leads to, okay, just straight physical, where with a girl, it can be verbal,
and
mentally,
emotionally
abusive at the same time. You know, you have a girl that's more prone to be anorexic or bulimic because she's being made fun of because of her body than you do having a boy do that.
Although I'm telling you, I have two boys and they, you know, am I fat? No, shush, you're young. I mean, kids shouldn't be worried about that just yet.
No, they shouldn't. And if they are worried about it or if they are being, you know, teased about it, they shouldn't have to feel like they have to accept it. They shouldn't have to feel like every time they go to school, they have to deal with this and it's nothing they can do.
Well, it's great to see the technology being used as one of those kind of checks and balances to kind of put some weight on the other side and help solve some of the problems, as opposed to being kind of this mysterious thing that we, you know, a lot of people use social media for good. There's, you know, so many great things about it, but having it being used in negative ways for the kids is tough. I think, and as you've kind of delved into the whole bullying situation, the problem, because they could, you could stop it in the schoolyard, Wendy mentioned, but then on the way home from school, I mean, if where there's a will, there's a way. Have you thought about any ways or any input on just stopping the want to, you know, getting these kids who are doing this to stop wanting to? Because if you can do that, I think you can achieve some real change. Just have those bullies decide that it's not a good idea, not because they'll be punished, but just because they understand that it's just not a good thing to do.
I think it's possible to try and stop bullying or try to decrease the chances of a bully. I spoke with a gentleman at a Currie High School, and he had mentioned how they've drastically been able to reduce the amount of fights that they have by the intervention processes they have in place. And basically, even though it's not at zero, it's way lower than what it was. So it's definitely possible, but you'll still have that small demographic that will still either bully or, you know, still have a malicious or vicious way of communicating how they feel about someone else for their own personal reasons. I don't think it's possible to completely annihilate it, but I think it's possible to get it to a bare minimum.
I wonder, too, if when a school announces we have this new Save Our Students app and it's available at our school right now, because I'm sure you have to tell the students how to use it and where it's available, which is Apple and Google Play. It's free. I wonder if when, like, a principal holds a little assembly and says, here, we're going to participate in the Save Our Students app, I wonder if that will decrease bullying, knowing that the bullies may be reported.
And I think it will. I think it'll create a bit of anxiety, you know, because now they know, okay, well, if I do this, you know, somebody can report
me. They're watching
me. They're watching me, and I will never know who it was, you know, so. And if I'm planning and telling this person who I consider my bully sidekick that I'm going to be doing this, they could be the one reporting me. So I'm kind of afraid to go here and do this now because I don't know if they're already there waiting on me.
You mentioned bully sidekick, and then you mentioned just bullies in general. Some of the reasons that they do it aren't necessarily because they really are, you know, are sadistic and want to hurt people.
Right.
So part of it maybe just establishes their social standing, their standing in the hierarchy of things, and maybe by bringing this up in the assembly, they'll have an out. Like, I would be bullying you, but I can't, so I'm out, you know, so they get a good excuse to do it. Otherwise, sometimes their friends expect them. Aren't you going to do something about this?
Right.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's because they're expected to do it. And sometimes I think it's because they're being bullied themselves. Either it's at home or it's in some other place in their lives.
Point.
And then they're transferring that when they get to school because they don't have anyone else to take it out on. They can't take it out on the person doing it to them at home. So they're taking it out on their peers.
Bullies can get bullied as well. We'll continue talking with Maisha Levon.
Yes.
Okay. Maisha Levon, the app she has created, Save Our Students, you can get it at Apple and Google Play, not available for Android, huh?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Which is which? Google Play is the Android?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, so both. Look at that. You're not discriminating against non-iPhone users.
Not at all.
All right. I have some texts that have come in that I would like to share with both of you, because this is a lot of people have this mindset these days. So stay tuned. It's Bill Leff on Vacation. It's Wendy Snyder here. Dane Neal, 720 WGN. We're talking with Maisha Levon, and what a high school did you go to, Maisha?
I went to Four.
Oh, you went to Four. Did you move because of bullying?
No, I didn't move because of bullying, but I went to four high schools in 4 years. I went to Crete Monee, I went to Thorn Ridge, I went to Thornwood, and I went to Bowen.
And then on to DePaul University?
And then on to DePaul.
And now an app to save our students is basically what it says, and it's going to do it. It's a free app allowing principals or other school leaders to basically anonymously talk about bullying and find out who's bullying who. The app's available on both Android and Apple and Google Play, so Android and iPhone users. Something I wanted to bring up to you, as the mom of two teenage boys, as they were growing up, there were some bullying moments with them, and I said, listen, you have to stick up for yourself, bottom line. If someone is, hits you, I reluctantly said, go ahead and hit them back, but know that you are going to get in trouble just like they are. It's like, you know, whoever's fighting, it doesn't matter to a principal who started it. You're both going to be in trouble. So I want my kids to defend themselves, definitely. But we are getting numerous texts, which I wanted to share with everyone. One good punch in the eye stops the bully. Not true.
No, especially not in today's age.
You need at least two.
Right, and it's not a guarantee that the retaliation would just be a physical retaliation. It's no say that they'll just want to punch back, you know.
Or meet you after school with a knife.
Or meet you after school
with
a knife or something worse. So taking the attitude like, oh, well, yeah, a punch in the eye, now you're dealing with...
This isn't the little rascals
right,
time,
this
people.
Isn't that anymore. This is not that anymore. So their retaliation may not be equivalent to the actual situation.
And we've seen stories in the news where things were... The initial confrontation happens maybe at school, but then escalates on social media, and then it ends in gunfire. It ends in someone dying, and that does happen.
And it's happening younger and younger now. It breaks my heart when I think of like little elementary school kids getting bullied to the point where they feel they can't go on anymore. I mean, come on, people, think of that.
Well, as a parent, you just feel just the thought of your son or your daughter being, you know, taunted or made fun of or hurt or whatever. It really hurts you. You know, it really does. I had a situation, kind of a funny situation in the bullying side. Is that 2 years old Maxwell was in his daycare center, and I guess someone had been biting some of the other
kids. There's always a biter.
Yeah, and it ended up being Maxwell.
I had a biter.
But it was a biter too.
We talk for a living. I mean, come on. That's what we do, and we taught our kids.
And so Max was biting, but the policy was they could not tell the other parents like who was biting them because they didn't want persecution, but I knew. And so the parents would be picking up the kids. They're like, oh, no, your little Jerry got bit again. You know, and I felt bad for them, but I also
right.
felt a little bit okay that at least, you know, no one was biting
Nobody
Max.
Knew.
See, that's a dad thing. And I'm telling you, these people, for cry eye, stand up for yourself. But now here's the other side of the coin. From 815, bullying has a lifetime effect. I was bullied from the time I started school till I finally dropped out of school. I started ditching school in second grade. It still haunts me today, enough so that I've blocked out a lot of my childhood years. It should not be happening where it ruins your life like that. There's always going to be a moment where two people don't agree on things. And you know what? Words hurt, but you say, you get mad at somebody. You say, that's what you do when you're mad at somebody. You say things to hurt their feelings. But this has escalated way beyond that.
Yeah, when you're dealing with elementary and high school kids, you're dealing with a group of students that are still trying to find themselves and still trying to establish their self-esteem. So when you start dealing with bullying situations like hers, they come to a point where they're embarrassed and they're afraid. So they just kind of shut down. And that can scar a person for life, you know, because they never really learn or figure out how to stand up for themselves without feeling like they're making things worse.
Right.
So they begin to believe that it doesn't, they don't matter, and the situation can't get better.
And it's just, for the most part, it's a lot of times it's just words, right? But it means a lot. And, you know, when you're a kid at that age, your whole world is there. And the thing that hurts also, I guess, for the faculty or for parents to try to be able to kind of solve the problem or give them a solution is that the kids are always thinking, oh, you don't understand. You know, you're not there. You don't understand. You don't know what it's like. But you wish there was some kind of tool, either conversationally or therapeutically, that could just, you know, take the power away from the occurrence. You know, don't give the bully the power to have it affect you. They can call you names, but you could just, I mean, you could call me names right
now. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
There it is. There's the answer right there.
You know, and we're getting a text, and I remember we were talking about bullying on the show before, and an expert on bullying called in, and it is the submissive behavior that makes you look like a target. I just started watching Orange is the New Black. I was up till 3 a.m. last night, and this cute
it's
little girl
popular.
Who's going into prison, they say, don't look weak, right? Because then you become the victim and you're an easy target. There is some truth to that. But after, you know, if you're bullied constantly, how do you, you do break.
Well, I mean, there are students and there are people that can, quote unquote, look weak, but you can be a 6 foot female and 300 pounds and you can still get bullied because you're bigger, you know? So
that's true.
Just looking frail and weak is just one way you can make yourself a target. You can become a target in almost any way.
True. Bullying has gotten way worse.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, the skinny guy who gets sand kicked in his face by the big bully on the beach.
But then he works out.
And then he comes back and takes that guy now.
Eye, right?
Yes. Maisha Lavon, it is such a pleasure to meet you. You've done such
you
a great thing.
Thank you.
It's called Save Our Students. It's an app. It's available now. It just was available starting this past Wednesday.
Yes.
So look, it's fresh out there. And how do people get it? What's the best way to get it?
They can just go into the App Store and just download it. It's just that simple. And you
Apple
know,
and Google Play.
Apple and Google Play.
Pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure
and
meet you as well.
May the rest of your days be filled with no bullying.
Thank you.
It's Dane Neal. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. All right, happy anniversary to Bill Leff and his lovely wife, Terry. Bill has taken the day off to...
You think they're
wah,
in the
wah,
park?
Wah, wah.
No, no. I see them riding on like one of those, what's it called?
A roller coaster?
No, like the two-person bicycle.
A rickshaw?
There's a no, not
a rickshaw. A waterbed?
A tandem?
No, yeah, tandem, bicycle, sharing.
I love this. We're playing charades with Dane Neal.
Sharing an ice cream cone. I see them doing that.
Terry is a normal human being, okay? She is not going to put up with that.
Being excited about new Pez colors.
Not Bill will be.
All right.
But happy anniversary to Bill Leff. He will return on Monday, and then I'll be gone for a week because I'm going to Nashville. And
to launch your country music career.
No, I wish. Someday. You're never too old to do it. My son Michael will be attending a blues camp, so we're making this a family road trip. We did it for the first time last year. And it went out. Well, we'll discuss it because we'll talk about family road trips a
Definitely.
Little later.
Oh, yeah.
But in the meantime, Kurt Wagner is here, and I was thinking of you while I was up till 3 a.m, completely binge watching Orange is the New Black.
From the beginning?
I went season 1, ep 1, and I love it.
Yeah? How far did you get?
6 episodes.
Okay.
So 6 hours I sat there, I guess. Sorry. Sorry for all the no dinner for the kids, whatever. It is amazing. I love this whole binge watching thing. I've never seen an episode of Mad Men, and it's weird that's actually featured in Orange is the New Black.
Mad Men?
Jason Biggs is wanting to watch Mad Men.
Yeah.
But that's what I love about online viewing. You really can enjoy something. Our producer, Kevin, just started watching The Sopranos. Never saw it before. Are you loving it, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm 2 episodes in, and I'm enjoying it.
How many people have gotten killed so far? I mean, whacked so far?
A couple. In the opening episode alone.
Yeah.
I will say there are a lot of breasts in Orange is the New Black.
Wow. They're in a women's prison. What do you expect?
If I ever go to prison, I'm going to keep my shirt on. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Your jumpsuit.
That's true.
You have a shower swimsuit.
I don't know, man. I got to push that aside. And what I do like, though, is the character development where you're introduced to everyone in there. Crazy Eyes. I finally met Crazy Eyes.
Yeah.
And then you're starting to learn their background, which to me is just a way to really suck you into a show.
Right. I mean, that's the whole fascinating part, isn't it? That
how do people get to prison?
Right, right. They all come from very different,
very different
situations and backgrounds and all that kind of stuff.
Isn't it crazy kind of the settings that you can have for successful and really popular television series? And you have some kind of formula. You know, you've got space, right? You've got kind of the fantasy world with, you know, dragons and wizards. And you've got prison. And it seems to work.
Well, and this is, you know, this is heralded as, you know, this great opportunity for, you know, it's such a diverse cast, and it's, you know, and it's women, and it's a story about women. And that's not what something you find every day on television, especially on network television.
And I don't know if it's just me, and please do not take this the wrong way, that it's some kind of fantasy, okay, because it's not. But I always wonder what goes on in prison. I'm never going to be there because I'm a law-abiding citizen. I really don't break the rules.
I thought you were going to say that this, you know what, it seems like a really great place to go
no,
and kind of just
it
work
doesn't.
Out.
It doesn't. And, you know, we were talking about bullying before. I mean, when the I don't even know the main characters yet, Chapman, I guess, is the blue collar girl who goes in there, or rich little girl, I should say.
Yeah.
And they tell her flat out, like, she did a lot of research before she went into prison, like how to survive. And it's like, you know, don't let them break you down. And it was funny because some prisoner said something to her and she said, well, that's not what I read about in for life in prison. And they're, oh, easy, Blondie. You studied for prison, but you got to do your research and be prepared.
Yeah, even if it's not true, accurate research.
I would do it, man. I research my research. I would be so prepared to go to prison, but I don't want to go.
Right. But if you had to, you'd be ready.
Well, you know, they say this new season that's currently airing, that's currently just came out last month.
What season are they on?
3 or 4.
Oh, God. I got a lot of watching.
They apparently, this is like the best season yet.
Really? Still a lot of bare breasts.
I imagine so.
I just...
Well, it works, I guess.
For you, maybe.
No, I mean, just, you know, in general, entertainment.
We're talking TV with Kurt Wagner. Go to his website because it's awesome, tvshowpatrol.com. And what did you want to talk about today? I don't want to hog it with my Origins of the New Black craze.
Well, speaking of streaming services, you know, it's a new month, so there's all kinds of new stuff coming out. The second season of Marco Polo comes out today on Netflix.
And what is that?
It's a story about Marco Polo.
So kids swimming in a pool going,
no,
Marco,
no.
Polo.
The eternal search for the other kid. Kind of.
But it's sort of more about Kublai Khan, the Mongolian warlord who took over China. It's sort of more of his story than Marco Polo's, sort of incidental in it almost. And that's much more the fascinating story, sort of the history of China and the dynasties and stuff like that. I interviewed Michelle Yao, who was the actress in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Oh, nice.
That I'll post that interview today. I talked to her yesterday. She's in this new season, and it was kind of fascinating to talk to her about it and how she was so happy to be in this because she feels it does show a lot of Chinese history that you don't get to see.
It's nice seeing a history instead of reading about it in a book. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know it's based on the writer's
vision. Right, and it's you know, there's creative license taken to the historical facts and everything, but you get in sort of an idea, and I always love those kind of shows because I even did that with this one. I watched some screeners for the new season. I said, oh, I wonder, did he really do that? Well, Kublai Khan, you know? And so I looked it up, and you know, those sort of broader facts are usually true.
Kurt, when you talk to the people that are kind of forming some of these shows, and of course, they want to make it entertaining, and sometimes whatever they know or whatever is at their disposal isn't maybe all that interesting. But I learned so much from Schoolhouse Rock, and thank goodness it was
all
accurate. But for when they do these kind of historical things, do they feel like when you talk to them, do they feel an obligation to be somewhat accurate, or is it just this is a story people know of, and if I can make something entertaining that's got a backstory people are familiar with, then I'm going to go with it?
Well, it depends on who you know, which show it is, which creator it is, and how much they want to follow the absolute facts of history. Because a lot of times, you're right, it would be boring.
But sometimes the truth is good enough.
Like, I think that show Turn, Washington Spies, I think the creator of that show tries very hard to get a lot of the facts correct. And it's a story about sort of America's first spy ring, which was during the Revolutionary War. And so you can find a lot of things in there that, you know, oh, George Washington really did do that, you know, or whoever. But then there are other shows, like the CW has a show about Mary Queen of Scots called Rain that, you know.
Not good?
The names are the only thing that's true.
You know, really?
Are the only things that are accurate in that show.
Because you'd hate to be a history student on a test. You're like, I think I know this. You know.
Well, I mean, I don't
not
think...
not an astronaut,
I honestly don't feel that you should ever count on getting your history lessons from any television show.
Or Wikipedia, because that is inaccurate.
Even, you know, the
to the Cliff Notes.
A lot of times the documentaries even. Like when they do those documentaries where they have a little bit of acting in it, you know, which are fun. I love watching those. You know, sometimes you just have to double check the facts on this.
This is important, and it's a luxury to have you here for this information for our son Maxwell. He watches that show Unsealed Alien Files, and he swears by it.
It's a great show.
Well, I mean, it's entertaining.
Truth is out there, Dane.
But is there? I don't know what you're going to say, but is there any truth to any of that?
You're asking him if there are UFOs.
Well, he's here.
I believe personally. There is life on other planets.
We asked Buzz Aldrin that question, and he believes that, too, and he's been up there.
Okay. Tomorrow's National UFO Day, actually.
I know. How will you be celebrating?
We're talking to a UFO expert tonight, actually, about it all.
By the way, if you are up late tonight or still out tonight, Kevin and Kevin Richter and Michael Heidemann are going to be working on this very radio station from 2 to 5 a.m.?
2 to 5 a.m. Shameless plug.
All right. I'll try and call in.
Kevin, do you ever sleep?
No.
You know, we have to take a quick break, and then we're going to continue talking to Kurt Wagner. And baseball fans might stick around because there's a baseball show that's coming up.
Yeah.
Baseball inspired.
Yes.
All right. It's Kurt Wagner. TVshowpatrol.com is his website. We are talking TV. It's Dane Neal. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here along with Dane Neal sitting in for Bill Leff. And we're talking to Kurt Wagner like we do each and every Friday from TVshowpatrol.com. And baseball seems to get into our blood. But there's a new series that's coming out involving real baseball announcers.
Yes, I was just in Atlanta earlier this week. IFC has two new comedies coming. One is called Brockmire, stars Hank Azaria as Jim Brockmire, who is a sort of old school baseball announcer, you know, the type of guy who says anything and then might have to apologize later for saying it, you know. He has some kind of really public meltdown when he's broadcasting the major leagues, and so he sort of goes away for a while, and the show picks up when he comes back to cover minor league games, like a minor league team somewhere. And but he's still sort of the brash, and you know, and he doesn't want to be in this small minor league place, so he still says anything he wants.
Now he doesn't care,
it seems. Yeah, now he doesn't care. But the interesting thing about it is his contemporaries will be current baseball announcers. So when we were down there, we saw we talked to a bunch of real baseball announcers, and now I'm not going to think of their names. Do you have it listed there? Jim Kerkerian.
I don't know any of these people. Jonah Curry.
Yeah, you got Brian Kenny and Joe Buck.
Joe Buck, yeah. Joe Buck, in fact, plays a big part in it because he and Joe Buck are sort of nemeses.
Everybody is with Joe Buck. I think.
And so I think it's going to be fun, and I don't think that one starts till January, so we have a while to wait for it. But Hank Azaria, I asked him if he's perfected his sports announcer voice, and he said, yeah, like when I was 15 years old, because he was a Mets fan, and he used to know all the great Mets announcers and other announcers. And apparently this character's been with him for that long. Like he's
really?
Had this character. It's a spinoff of a Funny or Die thing he did as nice. Brockmire also. And they tried to make it into a movie, and it had all the funding. They were getting ready to film it, and then their funding fell through like 2 days before they were going to start shooting a couple of years ago. So finally it's coming to IFC. So it looks fun. We got to watch a little scene where all of the announcers were at a convention in Chicago.
And so they're all
sitting at such a thing.
I don't know. I don't think so. They're all sitting at a bar talking, and it's
over each other,
over each other, interrupting each other, just making fun of each other, you know? And, there was a lot of jokes that I can't really say on the radio, but you know, it was fun. It was funny stuff.
That sounds really good. And we're almost out of time here. Tell us about Stand Against Evil, because sounds really good.
That was the other show that we went on the set of in Atlanta. And that one starts John C. McGinley, who was the really mean doctor in Scrubs, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
He's done tons and tons of stuff. And Janet Varney, who is a funny comedian. And he's a former sheriff of the small New England town, and she's the current sheriff. And they discover that the town is
No.
There's a lot of demonic possessions of barnyard animals happening.
Oh my God, I'm in.
In the town. And if you go to the site, my site, I have a little story that I wrote. Dana Gould, who's a comedian and was a writer on The Simpsons and Parks and Rec, created the show, and he talked about how he's always been a fan of horror movies and always been a fan of comedy, and so he wanted to make a comedy horror show or a horror comedy show. And he talked about how this is going to have real scares, like the cores sort of first.
So actual scary ducklings.
Things, okay. Yeah. Well, and we met a pig, a demonic pig.
Okay.
And then
did you meet him out back in the trailer?
And then there's comedy too.
Is this a cartoon?
No, it's not a cartoon. In fact, the guy Greg Nicotero, who does the makeup for
Walking Dead,
your beloved Walking Dead, his team created the pig. And the pig, I shot a little video of the pig doing its thing, you know, it's growling.
So it's moving around.
It's like a robotic pig.
Oh jeez.
And its eyes turn red, and it's got these really gnashy teeth and everything.
I don't know why this sounds intriguing.
It's going to be fun. And so when we were watching it, they had a piglet, like a little cute little 4-week-old piglet, run through. She had it be in this scene, and the one piglet would not stop squealing, so they had to get another piglet to take its place.
Cut.
And then that piglet is supposed to then turn into this big demonic robotic pig, that like satanic pig, and they named it Murgatroyd. So then that's when they showed us Murgatroyd.
Heavens to Murgatroyd. 30 seconds. Is there anything we need to know about for this weekend in the world of TV or elsewhere?
This coming week, I believe, Mr. Robot returns for its second season, which was a big, giant hit last year for USA, about the hacker.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So you can try to watch all of first season if you want.
Someone just texted, I'm on season 4, episode 10 of Orange is the New Black. Only one episode showed boobies briefly. So, Kurt, how do people find you and your the demonic pig? How do they see that?
The demonic pig story is up on TVshowpatrol.com. I tweeted a bunch of pictures and little video from the set visit. So if you want to go to Show Patrol on Twitter, you know, you can see some of that stuff. And I have a Facebook page, TV Show Patrol Facebook page.
And is Kit and Summer Games gymnastic teams up on your...
No, those aren't there yet. That comes in August. I just sent that to you because I thought you would enjoy seeing...
The little kittens.
The cute kittens.
Doing the summer games. They do gymnastics.
Yeah, it's the first year. They usually have a kitten Super Bowl around the Super Bowl time, but this is the first year they're doing because of the Olympics.
And Kurt, just to confirm, these are not demonic kittens doing
gymnastics. No, these are normal. Cute little sweet kittens.
They could
who are very athletic, apparently.
So nice to talk to you. Thank you very much. Yeah. You can go to tvshowpatrol.com, follow them on Twitter, Facebook, anywhere else.
Happy 4th.
Right back at you. Thank you so much. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Dane Neal at 720 WGN. Aren't you just envisioning a wood-paneled station wagon on the way to Wally World?
Family Truckster with the optional Rally Fun Pack. You ordered it all.
Right.
Didn't you get the Sky Blue Spec or something? The two-door Spec. He's like, no, I ordered the Family Truckster.
It was great. It's Wendy Snyder here along with Dane Neal. Bill is off for his 25th wedding anniversary. He's celebrating a nice long weekend. Indoor fireworks, if you know what I'm saying.
Safety first with fireworks.
We are leaving, and then I'm going to be gone all next week. My son Michael attends the Columbia College Fernando Jones Blues Camp in Nashville, and then he comes home and does it here at Columbia College in Chicago. We did it for the first time last year. So much fun that Nashville is.
How cool is that? And this is just the wisdom, right, of Fernando Jones, that he has it in Nashville as opposed to, you know, Des Moines, Iowa, or...
It's all over the world. He's got it in Corona, California, Japan. He's got these blues camps everywhere. But more importantly, since Michael had to go down to Nashville, we said, hey, last summer, this is our first family road trip. We didn't know what was going to happen. We, you know, are a family of fighters, not physically, but we yell a lot and we just, you know.
Cooped up in a car.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad enough in our house, you know, somebody wants to watch something on TV. So I'm like, oh my God, how is this going to go? We rented a van, a big time van, not a minivan, a Dodge Caravan, whatever that is. And it was awesome. We had no issues whatsoever. This year we have a new Toyota Highlander. The key to two teenage boys in the back seat. Captain's chairs.
Nice.
Because they can't, you know,
they can't,
they're not
like,
sitting
ease
next
into
to
the other's,
right.
Like zone.
You're past my line. So we are leaving to go to Nashville for all of next week. I can't wait to do it. Michael will be very busy with his blues camp, but I'm going to go check out Jack White's record store. There's just so much to do there. But family road trips can go awry.
Well, you're doing it in a smart way because you're picking an ultimate destination that's fun, that's cool, that's got something for everybody. Plus, Nashville is a manageable kind of bite-sized distance away as opposed to let's go to the Grand Canyon, which is, and there's nothing but a giant wasteland of the world's largest ball of twine and other things. And you can break down in South Dakota. Who knows?
But isn't that fun for a family to partake in? Because that's what I wanted to do next year.
Well, I think it may be fun many years down the road when you can all sit back and laugh about it, but there's
well, it's going on. It's stinky.
Well, who knows? It can be with the inevitable vomiting because that always happens, but I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, we did those kind of family truckster type vacations, never to a destination that I either chose or enjoyed. You know, let's go to the Civil War battlefields or let's go to the Glacier National Park. It was so far, you know, and just a lot of driving, right, to get to a place where you'd have to forage for firewood and get bit by mosquitoes and other things and fear for your life from bears and you know, skunks. Other than that, you know, there wasn't, I would have really much preferred, you know, a paper mache headed character in a roller coaster situation. But looking back now, I cannot wait to take my family on
the family road trip yet?
Well, Maxwell's 9, Eleanor is 8, and Vivian is 4. They're just about the time where, you know, they can all survive, right? Where you're not worried about, where's the other one? They can all sort of speak and kind of collaborate on safety. And then now the National Park Service has this program where if you've got a child in, I think it's 4th grade, and so I think that's what we're going to do.
Only 4th grade?
I think that's the program. If you've got a child in 4th, I don't know if they check their IDs, I'm sure, right? It's like you just have
do
a
Do
they
fake, even have an ID fake, in fake elementary grade. School?
Right, so I don't know. Maybe if you show up, that's enough effort right there. But I think you get free admission for you and your whole family to all of the national parks. Maybe Dave Schwann probably has more information on that because that's kind of what he does. But it's a program that they're doing. So it's like the perfect time to do it. And you want to do it when they're old enough to where they really do listen when you say, go to the bathroom before we leave.
Right.
You know,
they still don't listen at 13 and 17. Okay.
Yeah.
So every trip we get going. Okay. Everybody go to the bathroom. Yeah. Before we even get on I-55. Hey, can we stop at the rest up, I got to go to the bathroom. Are you kidding me?
Well, and when you're picking places that have a little something for everybody, as opposed to, let's say you went to the Grand Canyon when you were a kid and you were just overwhelmed with, you know, just the grandeur and the beauty, and you drive all the way there and your kid does the whole like, okay.
Can we go now?
I got to get back on my tablet. You know, I'm going to play Minecraft.
You know, it's funny because the tablet saves the family road trip, I think, and DVDs in the vehicle. We don't have that anymore because they have their own devices, so right. We don't need to pay extra to get a DVD player in the back of the car. But it's funny. I mentioned this on the air. We did a family road trip. My mom, brother, and sister and I, the four of us, drove to Washington, D.C., because kids should see Washington, D.C., and I wish I would have paid a little more attention, because there was one day my mom and sister had planned a tour, and my brother said, I'm good. I'm just going to stay back in the pool. And I said, well, if he can stay in the pool, that's what I want to do. So we stayed and swam while they went and looked at the Library
of
Congress or whatever.
History.
Yeah.
Technology has kind of given, you know, those distractions of what to do for the whole trip, because you mentioned the kids fighting. If there's nothing else to do, you're in the car for 10 hours. Those games, what games did you play? Remember the one where you looked for a certain color cars, or you had like punch bug this?
Or slug bug, as we called it.
Yeah, and then
mileage may vary on that one.
Or, you know, charades, just really, really, you know.
License plate bingo, difficult. But I don't remember the rules to it.
I'm just saying. And all of those kind of staring out the window and trying to focus on things inevitably, you know, led to more vomiting.
I am the worst person to travel with. I get car sick, and they say you shouldn't look out at the scenery because it's moving so quickly. So now if I'm driving, I'm fine, and that's because you are focusing on the road ahead. So now when I'm riding shotgun, when Jimmy Mack is driving, I'm just looking forward. I can't even look at my iPhone or anything. It makes me sick.
Well,
I'm a bundle of fun.
Well, you mentioned as a kid going on that, you know, that trip too, and I think it was, you know, Disney World. That was a place where everyone would want to go. And you know, what is the great gift or the super souvenir that kids want to bring back is their own Disney mouse ears, and they met an untimely fate.
That was my first trip to Disney, and I've been spending all these years doing a make good. I insisted upon having chicken a la king at one of the rest stops we stopped at. Not rest stop. I shouldn't say that. It was a full blown restaurant, people. With silverware and
was
everything.
Was it Howard Johnson's?
No.
Remember those?
Yeah, we used to stay at the Hojo Motor Lodges a lot. But this was just some restaurant, and we grew up in Brookfield, and it was weird because we saw some neighbors from Brookfield there, which was like, wait, we're on our way to Florida. And I insisted upon having chicken a la king, and the chicken a la king came back up during a spiral drive through the Smoky Mountains, and this was on the way home, and the only thing that I had to catch it was my magenta and purple Mickey Mouse ears. Oh, and my stuffed panda Nunzio got a little on him, too.
That's terrible.
We left him on the side of the road. Not Nunzio, but the Mickey Mouse ears.
And you didn't even get no cell phones, no pictures, no Polaroids, nothing to capture
nothing
that moment.
Why would you take a picture of that?
Well, I wish you had. Well, I don't know. But it would be interesting to see. But I actually made it. And, of course, my big throw-up moment is I made it my head like kind of out the window because no one was stopping for anything. Because, you know, a lot of false alarms. I don't feel good.
Right.
Yeah, whatever. Right. You're just going to deal with it. And so for the rest of the trip, this was early on, there was a big, like, throw-up smear all over the side of the car.
Oh, yeah. Enjoy your lunch, people. Really. How about some games or something to do within the car? I love Pinterest, can I tell you? I don't know if you're on Pinterest.
Well, as a card-carrying guy, I'm not on Pinterest all that often, but I appreciate
you do
that.
Have an account?
I don't. I don't even know
you
how
should.
To do
all
it.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Well, they have some ideas on how to travel. A little bit of planning and preparation goes a long way in making a family road trip good. We can talk about those. And listeners, if you have any, depending on your kids are younger,
yeah.
Age range of?
9 to 4.
All right. Mine are teenage boys, so they're pretty much fine at this point. Just give them their iPhones and video games.
Just leave them alone.
Yeah. Just don't talk to them, and then they'll be okay. But if you have any family road trip ideas, we are kicking off into the summer road trip season. 312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Dane Neal, and it's 720 WGN.
On the road again.
I will be on the road again, leaving for Nashville on Sunday. I was telling Dane Neal, who's in for Bill Left today, and I'm Wendy Snyder. Going there, we just kind of take our time, and there are various little antique shops that it's, if you have no schedule, it's kind of great. Because then you can go, oh, let's just stop there. That looks cool. I'm going to go buy some garden art, you know. And then we get back in the car, maybe stop then for lunch. It's great. Coming home was a little rougher because it's like we decided to go see the Country Music Hall of Fame on Saturday and then hit the road.
Okay.
And it's you got to get home. It's getting late. It was raining. So it's nice to not have a complete schedule to stick to.
Oh, it's great because you'll pass things along the way. And granted, you know, they've scientifically made themselves more alluring. But you've got like Dinosaur World, you've got the Merrimack Caverns, you've got big, and they make, you know, it's a hole in the ground. I get it, but they make it seem exciting and mysterious, and so you want to stop. And if you've got some kind of predetermined destination, like we've got to be at this place by blank, it always takes way longer to get there, you know, than you think it's going to. But are you guys as music fans and having, you know, kids that are musicians, are you guys going to check out things? Do you do that, like Grand Ole Opry or some of the other clubs?
I have to check it out. We did the Country Music Hall of Fame last year. It was so awesome. I hate that word awesome. Everybody uses it. It's overused. But it really was awesome to see, like, you know.
Do they have like an animatronic Conway Twitty or something out front?
No, but they have this Dolly Parton exhibit, and it's her great song, Jolene, that she wrote. It's the original piece of paper that she wrote the lyrics on.
Cool.
Is it Ronnie Millsap that is blind? And they have a whole little display for him, a whole showcase, and then they have his diploma from the School for the Blind, and they spelled his name wrong.
That sucks.
It's terrible.
Man.
Why didn't they fix that? Hi, Vicky.
Hi, Wendy. So I wanted to share some info with you. I have the same problem you do with motion sickness.
And Dane has it too.
I did.
Have you tried boning?
Excuse me. It's Bill's boning anniversary, is, not mine.
And 10 and 2 for your hands on the wheel.
B-O-N-I-N-E, boning. I haven't, but I've also heard of these C bands that you put on your wrist, which really help my younger son not feel the effects of car sickness. But boning works, huh?
God, it has saved my life. It's the non-drowsy form of Dramamine. And I even take it with that when I fly, because sometimes I get motion sickness from the turbulence.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I have to drive, or if anytime I'm going to go on a long trip, I take boning. And honest to God, it's a lifesaver.
All right, they should make lifesaver boning, because then people could just, you know, pop them in their mouths.
And
I will try
breath.
That.
It's a part of living.
Thank you. Happy 4th to you. Stay safe. Don't lose a digit. Road trip ideas for little ones. This was on Pinterest, and it's really cute. Traveling with kids, they have sticky notes that you would put on the console so everybody can see it with various times. And here's what you do with those sticky notes. Choose an interval of time that suits the age and developmental stage of your children. This person from Pinterest, her kids are 8 and 6, so 1 hour increments were just right. And then use sticky notes to record the increments, stick the time to the center console below the clock, tell the children that when the clock time matches the sticky note time, there'll be a small surprise. Oh. Like little dollar store stuff.
Oh, geez. Or maybe a trip to the, you know, the world's largest ball of twine store. Or
that's
Wall.
A bonus.
Did you ever go to Wall Drug? Did you ever do that?
No. To get boning?
No. I'm sure you, I'm sure you could, as well as like a Buffalo Burger or something. But it was one of those places that, you know, you're driving. Route 66 was famous for them. I don't know if they still exist. Maybe if anybody has any to suggest. But those kind of places where they were really kind of poor man's tourist attractions, you know. But
like a Stuckey's?
Well, Stuckey's, wasn't that a restaurant? They had somewhere. Yeah, it's like a paper mache. You know, it's like bearded lady, you know, the dog face boy, that kind of stuff. But like roadside attractions, like pull in here, you know, and really they weren't very entertaining. But,
but it gave you a break.
Because you got nothing from here to the Grand Canyon.
I gotta see the Grand Canyon. And, you know.
Have you never seen it?
No, I've never been there. Just through the Brady Bunch's eyes.
All right. But see, that's on the bucket list, right? You want your kids to be able to see that stuff, because there really is this time window where, you know, otherwise they'll be off doing other more exciting things. And this is where you can kind of coerce them into going and seeing some natural beauty.
You saw the Grand Canyon?
Well, I saw Yosemite. I don't think I actually made it to the Grand Canyon. I went to the Glacier National Park. I think I saw, the Old Faithful geyser?
Oh, yeah.
I saw that. I don't know how close it was. I had no control over it. I was a passenger, obviously, throwing up in the back seat. But I want the kids to see that stuff, because you know what? They may never get back. Look at you. You had every opportunity. You could have gone every time, but, you know, you never made it.
No, I got to go one of these days. Although Bill, if he was sitting in that chair, would say, it's not that big of a deal. I think it is a big deal, but I'm not going to put words in his mouth. But I think they did a family road trip to Grand Canyon, and he was kind of like, okay, this is a giant hole. What are we doing now?
Maybe you just fly there.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Hey, Charlie, how are you?
Hello. How are you doing today?
Good.
I love you guys.
Oh, thank you so much. Do you have some traveling advice?
Yes. I'm almost 70 years old. When I was a young kid, we did was road trips. And my mom used to take a paper bag, a brown paper bag, like from the grocery store, and she cut it out, and she put it underneath our shirts, and that was supposed to stop you from the getting car sick.
And did it work?
My brother and my sister, I'm the oldest of six, my brother and my sister used to get car sick all the time, and they still do. And it seemed to work. I don't know why.
Because you were prepared. Because it seems like you get sick when you're not prepared. You were prepared to go. And so that's why you headed it off at the pass.
I think it was psychological. Because,
psychological,
you know,
yes.
Yeah. Nobody got car sick.
All right. And you started a new fashion craze, too, didn't you, with your family?
Yeah, I did.
Charlie, thank you so much. We thank you for listening. Well, you know, just everybody be safe out there because this begins the whole road trip season. And we will be hitting the road on Sunday. I don't know why I need a dangling carrot or a gun to my head to even begin packing. I haven't even thought about that yet.
Or just head over there and just stop in and get some kind of jade belt buckles and maybe some cowboy boots. Just get a whole new wardrobe. Western style.
All right, I'll do that. Thank you so much to Dane Neal, who filled one part of the show in Bill Left's seat. Thank you very much. Happy 4th.
Thanks for having me, Wendy.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out who the mysterious guest who is hosting the Wintrust Business Lunch, as Steve Bertrand is out today, too. It's Wendy Snyder, Dane Neal, and Dean Richards coming up after the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's all happening right here, 720 WGN. Thank you so much, Veronica. It's Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff is out celebrating his 25th anniversary.
What do you think he's doing right now? Hi, it's Dean Richards, by the way.
Hi, Dean. It's Wendy Snyder. Right now, I bet they're taking a little bike ride.
Oh, bicycle built for two?
That's what Dane Neal, who filled in for Bill the first half of the show, said. He could see him on a tandem.
That's what I want to think is happening right now.
Do they make a big wheel tandem? Because that would be cute. Although Terry is an adult, so I don't know right. how much she'd partake. But I could. He is. I got to tell you, Bill was very giddy yesterday as he's talking about his 25th anniversary.
I was listening. I was.
It was so sweet.
I've never heard that little sweet side of him before. It's adorable.
It is adorable, and he had said that he went out to buy
Schmooky.
Is that what he calls you, or you call him that?
I call him that.
Oh. Kevin, did he say that he was going out to get a snappy outfit or snazzy? I can't remember what he said.
I think it was snappy.
I think so, too. He wanted to go get a new snappy outfit for his weekend.
What is that, like for him, a new baseball cap?
I know. I don't know. New cargo shorts?
It's not a snappy. You don't think snappy when you think Bill. You think comfortable.
Yeah, but then I thought maybe he was getting some sexy lingerie for himself.
Mm.
Okay, I can't think
something
about that anymore.
Something in strawberry, you mean?
Maybe. Dean Richards.
Delicious?
Yes. Dean Richards is the hardest working man in show business. What time did you get up this morning?
3 a.m.
And you're still, you're like the Energizer Bunny.
Woohoo! You know, when we finish the show today, I'll crash.
It does happen because you love being on the air. I love listening to your Sunday show, and you get this momentum going, and you just keep it riding. But like, if you sat down and took a little break, you'd be done.
I would be hard. But let's be honest, it's not like we're shoveling coal.
Oh, I know, I know.
Oh, poor me! I have to sit and talk for a little while.
It is so very fun.
I'm so exhausted.
You know what I'm excited about? As Kevin calls it, the Dean Factor. We have Ethan Slater, who plays SpongeBob in SpongeBob the Musical.
Oh, he's so good.
He is scheduled to be on the air with us today. And originally, he couldn't make it into the studio. It was just a phoner. And then when he found out Dean Richards was going to be in the studio, Ethan called and said, you know what? I can swing by the studio if that's
good.
Okay.
Good. I doubt it. I seriously doubt that it was because of me.
I don't know.
I seriously doubt that, although I did give him rave reviews.
I am so excited. You have seen the SpongeBob
yes.
musical, and I am going tonight. And I have to ask you a question. I'm bringing three teenage boys, because we have all my two sons and a friend. Is there a dress code at the Oriental Theater?
No, I don't think so.
Can they wear shorts?
Yeah, I think that's okay. I mean, for a
you
show like
think
this,
that's okay.
I'm pretty sure that this is okay. You can ask SpongeBob himself if he'll be offended, but I'm pretty sure. Actually, you know what? SpongeBob is in shorts. They will be right in step with SpongeBob, who is wearing shorts during the whole show. But this is the kind of show, I think, if you're going to come a little bit on the casual side,
this is it.
I wouldn't come from, you know, I just cut the grass and moved a truckload of bricks into the garage.
So bathe first?
So I would say number one, bathe first. And, you know, if the shorts are nice shorts, I
said no gym shorts. You can wear like the dressy plaid shorts.
Yeah.
As dressy as shorts could be.
I think that's for teenagers, I think that'll be perfectly fine and actually fit in with kind of the mood of the show because it's very lighthearted. It's not formal at all. If this was the opening night of Hamilton.
Oh, I'd get little tuxes for him.
Where I am personally going to be wearing a colonial outfit.
You are?
I bought like a whole George Washington kind of outfit. And if you think that's easy to find in my size, that, didn't know that there was a George Washington big and tall shop.
But, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, you learn something new all the time. But if it was, you know, like a formal opening night, then you got to get dressed up a little bit. But for going to see this show tonight, beautiful summer night.
It is going to be
great. In Chicago, are you kidding me? It's going to be fantastic. And here's what I'm recommending that you do after the show, because Guns N' Roses are going to be, they're going to be rocking when you get out of that place. The show starts at 8 o'clock. So even if Alice in Chains, who is the opening
act. That's the opening act.
Even if they start on time, they're not going to start on time. They never do.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of Guns N' Roses is sort of famous for coming out late. When you get done, they're going to be playing over there. You find some place. I'll bet you'll be able to hear the Guns N' Roses show.
If I'd like to.
You don't want to?
I don't know. Are you a big GNR fan?
I'm not sure if I would go park outside, but you guys are, I think, a little more rock and roll centric than I am.
I'm not a big GNR fan. There's like three songs I like. Welcome to the Jungle, Paradise City.
Sweet Child of Mine?
Oh, yeah. All right. I guess.
Be fun.
All right.
Sitting outside. Sitting outside in the tracks.
Right. Well, that would be fun. Really, in our shorts.
We can't go in. Now you'll be overdressed.
Good point.
You'll go from being underdressed to overdressed. I think you'll be fine. I see people dressed casually all the time when I go to the theater.
Because it is theater, and you think, you know, wow, we should dress up, but things have changed. I mean, even our church allows you to wear shorts. A lot of kids come in their baseball uniforms because they're going to church before their game. You know? So things have changed. And really, if Bill Leff was going, he'd be wearing shorts and a baseball cap.
I think you'd be perfectly fine with it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if people, you know, want to call in and...
You know what they're going to say? They're going to go, come on, throw your kid in a pair of khakis and a button-down shirt. But
I'll bet that they won't. Can we open it up? I don't want to take over here at all.
No, go ahead.
I'm just the guest filling in guy. But I would be curious to see not only about the style of dress, but like appropriate and inappropriate behavior. I think I mentioned to you guys when I gave you my movie reviews the other day, how much I wanted to strangle the kid who was sitting next to me.
Oh, yeah.
For all the noise that he was making. So, I mean, maybe this is a bigger conversation about appropriate stuff to do when you go to the theater or you go to the movies. What's too much and what have you experienced before? I'll tell you what really gets me when I go to the theater. Really, do you have to wear a big hat when you go to the theater? And this, for some reason, this seems to happen all the time. And I don't know if the theaters are just doing this as a joke to me, or they take the, let's see, who has the biggest hat?
Like Kentucky Derby hat? That big hat on a woman?
Big hat. Big headdress. Big, you know, like a big scarfy kind of thing that goes on the head that...
They put them right blocks, in front of you? Every time?
You, block the view. That happens more often than you would suspect. But all, you know, the people opening the candy... the people making noise. As I'm going down my list here, I'm realizing maybe I'm the problem.
You know, honestly, you and when you're on with us, and Bill loves to go to movies, and his kids are older, and they're girls, and they can handle themselves. So he and Terry go to movies a lot. We have 13 and 17-year-old boys. We don't get to go out to movies as much. But I don't like any of that. I don't like sharing the room with anybody.
Right.
I like to pause it if I have to go to the bathroom. That's why I don't go to movies that much anymore.
And that's perfectly fine. But when you're at a theater with other people, you have to realize that there's a different kind of decorum.
Yep.
Because people are talking. I hear this all the time now, and I sort of don't even pay attention anymore of people talking, reacting to what's going on the screen, happens all the time.
All right. Will you tell people, too, that on their iPhone they can make their screen dimmer if they have to answer a text?
Yeah, or they have a button on the phone where you can actually turn your phone off.
I can't do that.
Really? Are you kidding me?
The ringer's off, and the brightness is all the way down, and it's on vibrate. So sometimes I enjoy the movie more than others. But I'm saying if I need to be reached, this is my lifeline. As a mother,
I guess.
But I turn it. I the volume is off.
It's so annoying to the other people around you.
Not mine. There's no glow and there's no sound. How can that be annoying? Who cares if it's on?
I'm going to have to sit in the dark room with you.
All right, we'll do that during the commercial break.
Oh, good.
312-981-7200. Bill Leff off celebrating his 25th wedding anniversary with his lovely wife, Terry. He'll return on Monday.
She is lovely, by the way.
She is, and funny.
Bill is way out of his league with her.
Absolutely. He'll be the first to admit it.
He is. They're both lovely people. But she's like super lovely and super nice.
He lucked out on this one.
This may be the weekend to leave him.
Oh, great. That was Dean Richards. I'm Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Dean Richards is sitting in for Bill Leff for the rest of the afternoon.
Here's what I have planned for Monday night for the big 4th of July show. Oh.
Where's the ah?
That's what I've rehearsed. Well, I'm then pause for the next one. Ah. You're going to hear a lot of that.
Did it take a long time to write that material?
I'm trying to memorize it. I'm very methy. I don't want to overthink it.
How many O's in oo and how many A's in ah?
It depends.
Depends how
big
the
whole thing away right now.
I'm sorry. That's true. Spoiler alert. All right. You were talking about just etiquette in general and how people dress and act when they're in a public place, whether it be going to see the SpongeBob musical tonight or going to a movie. What is right? What is wrong? And I think there's a lot of wrong things. Becky wants to jump in. Hey, Becky.
Sorry, I'm with Dean on this. Crinkling paper, people talking. We went to the movie theater recently, and I was good through the previews. I was good for them talking. Movie starts. There was a group of ladies behind me, and I just said, excuse me, the movie started. Would you mind not talking? And they nodded and said, oh, yes, yes. And they just switched to a different language but kept talking.
If he doesn't understand the words, then it won't be distracting.
But what I mean, like, first of all, I don't talk at a movie theater, and if I do get Twizzlers, I try to open it in the lobby so you don't all of a sudden crinkle the paper there. But I mean, if you say something to somebody, are they usually snippy back to you?
I don't like the dirty look. Just ask me. But personally, and yes, the phone does glow into the eyes of the person behind you.
Oh, totally.
The seats are raised,
Wendy.
So if you're on your phone, the glow does come up and hit you in the eyes behind you. Just give me a heads up. I bring Ziploc bags to throw my candy into because the Ziploc doesn't make a noise.
Wow.
That's Dean great. Wants to sit next to you, Becky, at the next movie.
I want to go to all movies with you.
I won't say a word.
Wow, you bring quiet receptacles. I would have never thought of that. So what's your take on Wendy's original question on this for shorts at the theater?
I'm a big no. I have to be honest with you. My daughter's a professional dancer in New York, and we go to some shows playing to see her, and I just kind of can't believe. Now, does everything have to be hugely expensive? No. But I think there's a certain etiquette of even just a simple dress or decent slack.
So if your sons wouldn't mind wearing a nice dress.
I think I have one that they could borrow.
Yeah, I mean, even jeans with a nice shirt I could go with. But short, I'd have to go with a no on that, too.
All right, well, thank you for that, Becky. I appreciate it.
Sorry to be so, stiff and old here, but plus, things are expensive. Movies are expensive. Theater's expensive, and you want to enjoy it as much as you can.
Yeah, but I want to be comfortable. I want the kids to be comfortable, too. And, I'm just thinking if Bill was going, he doesn't really, I don't think he has long pants. He has a suit.
I don't think I've ever seen
shorts.
Bill in long pants.
Just a suit for the, when you were inducted into the Walk of Fame.
Oh, right. He did have a suit on that day. That's right.
That made by Garanimals as well.
Perfect.
Thank you, Becky.
I think because it's SpongeBob, the shorts are okay. I think the whole vibe is a little bit childlike, a little bit much less formal. I disagree with Becky on this for this tonight.
Well, if we get kicked out, can I drop your name?
Yeah, stop by my house. I'll reenact the entire show in my living room. I pretty much remember the whole thing.
630 has texted in, my biggest pet peeve in a movie theater is people who eat popcorn with their mouth open. Their crunching sound drives me crazy.
Yeah, I've had that. Can I throw just on a side with that? The ice crunchers.
Oh, yeah.
Those are if you get to the bottom of your cup and then you're doing the that you apparently think that everybody can't hear, then you take the plastic lid off, take a mouthful of ice, and now you still think that apparently people can't hear.
On honest to God, when I'm eating popcorn anything...
I'm like the guy in the police academy.
Michael Winslow.
With my sound effects.
You are very good. I'm sorry I didn't commend you on that. Yeah. Even when I eat popcorn, if I can hear it, then like I slow down and I try and let it dissolve a little bit. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be a nuisance to anyone else.
That's why milk duds are good. They bother no one.
Until your tooth comes out.
That's true. Until the filling comes out.
Hey, Rich, welcome to the show. Dean Richards, Wendy Snyder here, 312-981-7200. We're talking about going to see SpongeBob the Musical, which we're going to be talking to Ethan Slater, who plays SpongeBob in that very said musical coming up after the news. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts is, to a degree, I agreed with the previous caller about noise, candy wrappers, cell phones, screens, et cetera, et cetera. What I didn't agree with her on, and I agree with Wendy, is the dress. I don't know what the deal is with shorts. If I'm paying $50 for a ticket, I should be comfortable. The only thing I have to say about dress, as long as you're not wearing something like a T-shirt with something vulgar or crude or offensive on it. But beyond that, you should be comfortable. You should be able to wear shorts. Like I said, as long as it's nothing that would be deemed offensive.
Or dirty or ripped.
No offense, no offense, because I'm a heavy guy, so I feel I could get away with saying this. I know I need to lose a lot of weight, but no offense, but if you're like a size 19, you should not be allowed to wear Daisy Dukes. But as long as it... As long
Why?
As it,
Did someone make fun of you when you were wearing them, Rich?
Well, I don't wear them, but you know what I mean? There are certain things that us heavy people just should not wear. But as long as it's in good taste, I don't have a problem with what people wear to the theater.
Doesn't that go against what you're saying, though? If I'm paying for the ticket, I'm going to be comfortable. If somebody who is larger decides that they are comfortable wearing Daisy Dukes or something that you or I might say, you know, doesn't that person have a full-length mirror in their house? I mean, shouldn't a person just wear? Who cares what somebody else is wearing? I know
shorts, yes, but maybe it's because I'm this way about myself. There are certain clothes I look at them. I'm like, nobody should have to see me wearing an item that looks like that. Which is why I don't own any of items that, you know. Let's face it, the fact that they make Speedos for guys my size, I think should be illegal. It's like, because I'll admit it. We're not of the cut. We should wear stuff like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it either. But you know, honestly, I just really don't care.
I know there's
somebody what's somebody at the theater? I mean, really, Wendy, what, like, somebody at the theater is going to go look at those poppers?
Well,
like,
see,
what do you?
This is what
who cares?
Worries
you're
me
there to
because
have fun.
You know, now because Facebook's around, you're recognized because you're on TV every morning. I am because of Facebook, and they're going to go look at Wendy Snyder's kids. They're dressed shabbily. Like, no one uses that word.
Poppers. Throw them a pence.
Rich, thank you very much.
They shouldn't have worn a pair of pence.
I just, you know, when you have, my 13-year-old son has been wearing shorts since January 1st.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't even know if he's growing. I don't even know if we have long pants that fit him.
I think you're going to get the approval from SpongeBob himself when he comes in on this.
We'll find that out in moments. Debbie, you have the last word on this.
Hi there. We do community theater ourselves, and we go to the show. It's kind of a special thing. And so I'm all for dress up when you go. Be comfortable, but I think you can get comfortable dress clothes. You know, I mean, don't wear jeans, you know, with holes in them. And shorts, I think that would depend on the show. I agree with Dean. This is kind of a kid kind of show, so maybe that would be okay. But we pay for the price you pay for the tickets. It's a special thing for us, so we dress up when we go.
Yeah, but the tickets cost so much that you don't have money to buy the nice clothes.
Who has money for clothes, right?
Well, you know, I mean, just something nice. So, I mean, like, the kids, I know they pay big money for these jeans with the holes in them and stuff. I don't think that's appropriate for the theater. We took our 7-year-old grandson to see a Christmas show at Theater at the Center, and yeah, I went and got him a nice pair of black jeans, even black jeans. jeans that were a little dressier and a plaid shirt, you know, just something nice, not something that he'd wear to school or something.
I agree with that, and it's easier to dress a 7-year-old because they don't complain
right.
as much as a teenage boy does.
Completely different, right.
Debbie, thank you so much. There was a video that we posted on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, about the day Brookfield Zoo opened in 1934. And it's awesome to see like all these gentlemen with their hats
suits
and their
and
suits,
yeah, right.
like you used to go to a baseball game.
You see
and,
pictures
like that.
Of like, Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
People all like really, really super dressed up. Used to be, I remember when we would go on an airplane.
Yes.
Which wasn't that often when we were kids.
Me too.
But you got dressed up to go on an airplane.
Your traveling clothes that you really wouldn't even wear on vacation. That would
like
be your
so
plane outfit.
So uncomfortable for a kid. So uncomfortable. Well, now I'm self-conscious because I like to wear leisure suits when I go see plays. I hope the lime green color isn't keeping distracting to people.
We're going to take a quick break.
Dean's ruffled shirt is making noise again.
Oh, man. All right. Dean Richards is in for Bill Leff, and we are going to talk to Ethan Slater, who plays SpongeBob in the musical that I am going to see tonight while bringing my boys in shorts. I'm sorry. I've made a stand, and
I'm with
that's
you
what
1,000% of this, and I'll bet SpongeBob will be, too.
We'll ask him. 720 WGN.
Are y'all ready, kids?
Aye, aye, Captain.
I can't hear you.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Isn't a pineapple under the sea.
SpongeBob SquarePants.
You're scaring
me. I have grown up with my kids watching SpongeBob, so I am going to be thrilled to see SpongeBob the musical tonight. You have seen it and have raved about it.
I have.
And look who's
Dean's List A+. I saw the TV commercial, so it must be true.
And we have SpongeBob himself in the studio, Ethan Slater. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. How was the interview Dean just conducted off the air with you?
It went really well.
We had a great conversation. It's all yours, Wendy.
You guys were talking, and it's hard when someone's in the studio because you don't want to give them the cold shoulder or anything. But Dean has warned me it's going to be a musical extravaganza tonight.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a big old party.
Is it really?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it really is. Let me just say, so it doesn't sound like you're bragging about yourself and bragging about the show. This is one of the most fun shows that I think I've seen. You know, I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's my day. So when I come to the theater at night, I'm usually pretty cranky and a little bit on the tired side. Honestly, if I stay awake during your show, I consider it a good night. I was laughing my head off at this show. Not to mention captivated by the music in the show. You know, this is the music from this show comes from some of the biggest names in music. Nothing short of a David Bowie, of a Cyndi Lauper, of Plain White Tees, Steven Tyler and Joe Perry from Aerosmith.
Oh, yeah.
T.I. I mean, it's a really impressive list of people who are SpongeBob fans and have contributed music because they wanted to be part of this project. And
and that's what it was? They were SpongeBob fans and asked to be part of this?
Well, from what I understand and from what I've heard from all of these artists that I've gotten the chance to talk to is that the second they were approached about the show, there was sort of no hesitation because they already loved SpongeBob, the TV show, and they wanted to be a part of this. So, and it, to be honest, it really shows in the songs that they wrote. You can feel that they feel attached to it and that they've written some of their best songs
about
SpongeBob for SpongeBob to sing. It's really an honor to get to sing them. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and these are songs that fit in so well with the storyline that's being told. You can feel, I mean, it fits in with the show, but when the Bowie song comes on, you're like, oh, it's the David Bowie song. You know, the T.I. song stuck with me. The
who's T.I.?
The rapper.
I'm so on hip. You're saying it like I really don't know.
He was pretty mainstream. I thought he was pretty mainstream.
I'm not.
It's huge.
And that you might know that. Plain White Tees song, BFF,
BFF,
is that what it's
yeah.
called? Is one of the sweetest, like loveliest songs, you know, Best Friends Forever. It's SpongeBob and Patrick singing the song together. And, you know, clearly there's some fans outside the window right now holding up Patrick and SpongeBob.
All right, are you going
dolls.
To see the SpongeBob musical tonight, mister? You are? What's your name?
Mark.
Mark, where are you from?
Toronto.
And you're coming in to see, look, he's holding a SpongeBob and a Patrick up against the window, and we've got Sean's wearing a SpongeBob. This guy's playing SpongeBob in the musical right here.
Hey, Sean and Mark. Looking forward to seeing you tonight.
Perfect.
All right.
Yeah, Dad's not too awkward walking down Michigan Avenue with a SpongeBob and Patrick doll.
He doesn't even care. I mean, it's cool to like SpongeBob. It really is. That's Ethan, cool. Were you a fan of SpongeBob?
Oh, yeah. Well, it came out when I was 7, so it's been a part of my life since... It's formed my sense of humor since I had a sense of humor to form. You know, I actually didn't grow up with cable in my house, but it has that added nostalgia for me of going to friends' houses and watching TV. And my grandmother had cable, so I would go there and watch Nickelodeon and watch SpongeBob. So though I didn't get to watch it every day after school, I did get to watch it with my best friends, and that was pretty special to go back to BFF.
Yeah.
I love SpongeBob the movie, too. Great part with David Hasselhoff in it.
Right. Well, this...
Oh, yeah, when they're riding into the ocean.
I mean, wouldn't you say, Ethan, I think part of the beauty of this, it's not... you don't have to have been a fan of the show to get it. This is influenced on the TV show.
Totally.
If you did grow up watching it, you'll appreciate it probably a little more. There are lots of little inside things that are going to happen that you love. But, like, from the moment that you walk into the theater, the stage, the setup, the show has started for you the second that you walk into the theater because of the set, right?
Yeah,
be one of the most beautiful you've ever worked on, I would think.
It is certainly the most beautiful I've ever worked on. I mean, David Zinn is brilliant. And so, like you're saying, it's this immersive set. From the second you walk into the already gorgeous Oriental Theater, you're surrounded by these bright, vibrant colors, and you feel like you're underwater. And also with the projections by Peter Negrini, it's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, the technology in this and how they project things up on the screens are cool. Part of the set is kind of like a Rube Goldberg-like
on the sides
contraption. So there are portions of the show where things begin to move on sides and shoot onto the stage. It's really quite amazing. I mean, that's the set, but let me just brag on Ethan a little more.
Okay.
I'm sorry that I'm such a huge fan. I hope I'm not embarrassing you, but this guy, I don't know how he has the stamina to do show after show after show. He is nonstop. The physicality that he goes through in the show is nothing short of amazing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's pretty fun to do. It's like getting to play on a jungle gym with your best friends.
Yeah.
I mean, we're a pretty tight ensemble, so I really feel like it's just this opportunity to play with my best friends for 2 hours, 8 shows a week.
Yeah.
And that makes it easier.
what I said in the review, it seems like you were born to play this role. I mean, because you so embody SpongeBob while you're on the stage.
I guess it's
that's a compliment, right?
I never knew I was born to play. Yeah, I'll take it. No, SpongeBob is – the more I've worked on this, the more I've realized that SpongeBob is somebody that I actually feel comfortable looking up to. I mean, he's got this optimism and this – bright outlook on life that's really special and lacking in the world. So it's something that feels good to play and to get to become part of myself. It really does feel like a special character. And I think that's why he's been so popular over the past 17 years. The show and the character of SpongeBob have become huge and mythic because there's something innately beautiful about the character and something that we sort of wish we had more of. And that's what I've taken from it over the past 4 years of working on the show. And I think I've been able to embrace some of it. It's been really a special opportunity for me as a person.
I was just going to say, you're absolutely right, and you forget about that if you're a SpongeBob fan. He is very positive. He's a great friend. If his friends have a problem, he tries to solve it. If his friends are fighting, we should all be more like SpongeBob. We really should.
Absolutely. Right. He's motivated by his love for his friends and for his community and his home and the people with whom he works. It's a special thing. And I think our show is at its heart, at its core, a show about community and a show about joy and not just acceptance, but really the embracing of one another. And that's something that I'm really proud to be a part of.
And what a great first experience. I know a lot of kids are going to the SpongeBob musical, but what a great introduction to theater. You know, when I was growing up, my mom took me to see The Wiz, which I loved, and I can't remember what other play we saw. And that was fun, but this is such a great introduction for kids to want to go to the theater now.
Yeah, I hope
Hamilton's coming up. I mean, these are...
Right.
Plays have changed.
The casting on this is, I think, also pretty spectacular. I mean, as I said, you seem to have been born for this role, which is awesome. But the actor who plays Patrick, Danny Skinner, is also just perfectly cast.
He's the man.
For this.
Yeah. Well, Danny and I have been working on it together. We started working on it 4 years ago during the first workshop.
Isn't that amazing, too, that this role, he's been working on the same role for the last 4 years?
Yeah. Well,
getting to this point.
It's been every 6 months or so, three or 4 months went in between. We would do a workshop that was between 2 and 6 weeks long, and the script would change and the music would change, all in an effort to make it the best show it can possibly be. And that's something that I've learned over the past 4 years, is that creating a Broadway show or a show of this size, it takes time and it takes effort and passion from the people making it. But yeah, it's been quite a journey. I've been calling it my SpongeBob University.
Yeah.
Because I got to learn so
much.
You have a
PhD in SpongeBob University, indeed. My friend.
And this is my dissertation.
We have to take a quick break. We are talking with Ethan Slater, who plays SpongeBob in SpongeBob the Musical. And if you want to go, you need to hurry, because the SpongeBob Musical only runs through July 10th. It's at the Oriental Theater, 24 West Randolph Street. And you can go to thespongebobmusical.com or broadwayinchicago.com.
It's headed to New York. Just like Mel Brooks brought the producers here before it went to New York. Just like, you know, so many huge productions that went on to New York. This one's getting its tryout here. Says, you know, the producers, the directors that I've talked to, they love Chicago audiences. They love the feedback that they get from Chicago audiences. So it's, going to be headed there. Are we going to go to a break? Because here's why I'm asking. Because if... What?
You're going to continue your interview with Ethan.
I'm going to have a separate interview with Ethan during the break. I'd like him if we can get him to do his SpongeBob voice to toss us to a break. You know, like we'll be back.
Awesome.
With more of Bill and Dean.
My name's Wendy.
Oh, sorry.
I know I'm not very busty, but they're bigger than Bill's.
My brother's name is Bill, so all my life it's been Bill and Dean. Bill and Dean, Bill and Dean. Sorry.
Well, you know,
we'll be back with more of Wendy and Dean after a break on WGN. Does that
I think you're going to have to come see the show to hear the SpongeBob voice.
They won't let him do the voice.
Really?
I apologize for that, but I can say it in Ethan's voice, which is a little less exciting.
I'm not even sure if I'm interested in that. I take back everything I just said. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
All right, well, we are going to take a break
Wendy
right now.
Maybe Wendy wants to do her SpongeBob voice.
Oh, I can
give
just
it a go.
Do the laugh. I can't do
good.
It.
Really
I actually
good.
Interviewed Tom Kenny, who explained that he kind of like pulled his throat like he had a fork
the
in
skin,
his...
The yeah.
skin, yeah. To make that noise. I can't do it. It hurts. I thought girls don't have Adam's apples. I do. We'll talk about that later on.
We've just made an amazing discovery
day.
Here. I don't even care about the SpongeBob voice anymore. We just learned something about Wendy.
All right, it's 720 WGN.
Let's gather around the campfire and sing our campfire song. Our C-A-M-P-F-I-R-E-S-O-N-G song. And if you don't think that we can sing it faster, then you're wrong. But it'll help if you just sing along.
SpongeBob SquarePants wants to make the world a better place, and I really didn't think about it until Ethan Slater, who plays SpongeBob in SpongeBob the Musical, said it. He really is a positive little dude. His glass is always half full.
Absolutely.
That's kind of the point of the moral of the whole musical, really,
yeah.
is the optimism of SpongeBob when things are going awry in Bikini Bottom.
Yeah.
Well, it's the exact opposite of you, Dean.
That's right. That's right.
Complaining
Maybe
about
that's
everything.
That's why I liked it so much.
Yes, Bikini Bottom, and all your favorite characters are there. Squidward's going to be there, of course. Of course.
Don't get me started on Squidward.
Oh, yeah, you warned me.
Don't get me started. Gavin Lee is the name of the actor.
Yeah.
He played Bert in Mary Poppins on Broadway. He's amazing. He's so funny. He's a four-legged Squidward in the show. So visually, it's very funny. But his character is very funny during the whole show. But there's a song and dance number, right?
Yeah, Showstopper, absolutely. Right? Written by They Might Be Giants. It's an absolute showstopper. Every night, we tease him backstage because the audience reaction is always so uproarious. So always tease him that it'll get better. It's just a tough audience tonight. Don't worry. You're doing as best as you can, Gavin. No, he really brings down the house, and the number itself is amazing, and the choreography in it, it's
stunning.
It's amazing. I can't wait.
I wish I could watch from the front of the house. I have to watch from the wings, but it's pretty spectacular.
You probably like it because it's one of the few times when you don't have to be on the stage.
It's a nice breather. It is certainly a nice breather.
You asked me, Dean, who my favorite SpongeBob character was, and of course SpongeBob is awesome. I love Patrick, but Captain Krabs is also one of my favorite characters. He's featured in this, I'm hoping.
Yeah, Eugene Krabs. Carlos Lopez plays him, and he's SpongeBob's boss at the Krusty Krab, and he's cranky and loves money.
And won't give the recipe to the Krabby Patty.
Like me.
Yeah, see?
That's me in the show.
True businessman.
Cranky and loves money. That's me.
No wonder you like this so much.
Yeah, even he ends up like loving the show by the end of it.
Right.
Yes, it's a full turnaround, a full arc.
Exactly right. Did you have any interaction at all with the musical artists that contributed to the show?
I've had a little interaction with some of them. I'm hoping to get to meet more of them because a lot of them are idols of mine. But I did get to sing a song written by Tom Higginson of the Plain White Tees with Tom. And he and I have become friends. And he
BFFs?
Actually came back. I would say so, but I don't want to speak out of line. I don't want to speak for him. And certainly good friends.
Tom's a pretty good guy.
He's a great guy.
He's a really nice, down-to-earth guy. And
this
song is very Plain White Tees. I mean, the second that you hear it, you know it's the song that Tom and Plain White Tees did, but it's so sweet at the same time. I was at that preview when you performed that with him, and even without any costuming or staging or anything, it still brings the house down.
Oh, that was such a fun opportunity to get to perform like a stripped-down version with him and just in my T-shirt and jeans. It was pretty cool.
Yeah,
he actually came back to see the show last night, or two nights ago, maybe, and he brought his son, and we had a great time. But he was, he loves the show, too. He was raving about it.
It's got to be kind of a thrill, because this goes to Broadway. I got to think that's when your John Legends are going to show up.
All the celebs are going to be out there. Is that going to make you nervous?
Be there, yeah.
It makes me nervous in one way. I'm ready for them to hear us sing their songs because they wrote them so well. That it's hard to ruin. So I feel good about how we are performing them. But I just can't wait to meet the artists behind these songs. There's getting to sing a John Legend song, an original John Legend song every night is an indescribable honor. It's so cool. So I really do look forward to getting to tell him that in person.
You've done theater before, of course.
Yeah.
Is this the coolest ever so far?
It really is. Since I started working on this, I've gotten to work on other shows that have been really wonderful. One of the cool things about working as an actor is you get to work with different groups of people. So you make friends on all these different jobs. And I've met some really wonderful actors that I love a lot and I'm very close with still. But this has been one of the most special experiences in terms of having an ensemble. We've got a cast. And down to the person, everybody is generous and warm, and we're close in a way that we spend time together on our days off, which
really
during tech we spend 14 hours together a day, and then we're still hanging out afterwards, and that's a little silly, a little ridiculous.
No one in radio does that ever.
I can't wait to get out of here at 3, to be honest with you.
we are out of time. It is a pleasure to meet you. I can't wait to see you live in action tonight. Ethan Slater as SpongeBob in SpongeBob the Musical. Go to BroadwayInChicago.com to get your tickets. And you have to hurry because it only runs through July 10th.
Yes, come quick. Come quick.
The most important question that we started off the show
yeah.
with today. Wendy's
oh, yeah.
bringing three teenagers tonight.
Yeah,
boys.
And is in a quandary.
Can
is it okay
shorts?
For them to wear shorts?
Here's what I'll say.
Uh-oh.
Totally.
Okay. SpongeBob says totally.
Oh, I thought he was
yeah.
about to dress
I know.
You down.
Well, I was listening to the show before I came here, so I had heard the
you
debate.
Had a vibe, right,
and my thought is what makes you feel comfortable, as long as you feel like you're, you know, taking advantage of the night that you're paying for and that you're experiencing, and as long as you're courteous to everyone around you, absolutely wear what makes you feel comfortable. This is that kind of show.
Excellent.
I will say sometimes it gets cold in theaters, so if you get cold, bring a sweater.
So shorts and a pashmina.
But yeah, exactly.
That's a great look for a teenage
Which
boy.
Was
a
band I was in.
Once. Well, I did sure shorts and pashmina.
Yeah.
I think I bought your EP. Yeah.
You were the one.
Well, thank you. SpongeBob says it's okay. Ethan Slater says it's okay. They'll be tasteful shorts, longer ones with a belt and a nice clean T-shirt.
Well, mine on stage will be nice and short. So,
all right, cool.
Yeah.
Such a pleasure to meet you. Can't wait to see you
it's
tonight.
Great to meet you, too. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Ethan.
All right. Dean Richards, Wendy Snyder. More after this, 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff is off today. He will return on Tuesday, and I'll be gone all next week. But sitting in Bill's chair today is...
Shmoopy,
the lovely Dean Richards.
I want to be as adorable as Bill today for you.
He was only adorable last time I worked with him yesterday because he was so excited about his 25th anniversary.
Right.
He was Mr. Oogie Googie.
He was Shmoopy. That's my new name for him. Shmoopy.
I have to tell you, last night, I was telling you this off the air, and I want to share it with people. Last night, my husband was taking Tiki, the dog, for a walk. And in our neighborhood, there are tall bushes as you're approaching a corner. And I was just thinking about this last week when I was walking the dog. The dog usually goes first. He leads you.
Kind of pulls you, right?
Yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, I can't see beyond these hedges. What if a kid is riding a bike or something? I should be careful. So now I hold Tiki back, and I look to make sure no one's coming. And there's never been anybody there. Well, last night, Jim says to me, can I just tell you something? I said, what's wrong? He's like, there are kids riding their bikes at 65 miles an hour on the sidewalk. They almost killed Tiki. They almost paralyzed me. I want to file a complaint. I don't know who to file it to. I just want to know that when I'm paralyzed by some kid riding the bike down the sidewalk, that my family is taken care of. And I thought about it, and it's like, you shouldn't be scared to walk around your block in your neighborhood, taking your dog for a walk. Why are kids riding on the sidewalks?
I thought that
isn't that illegal?
I thought you were supposed to be, if you're riding a bike, I thought you're supposed to be in the street now.
I could have sworn that too. And these aren't, this, I said, how old was the kid, Jim? Was he like 7 or 8? And he said, no, it was 11 o'clock at night. It was like an 18-year-old kid just hauling ass down the sidewalk.
I notice bike problems all the time. And people who listen to my Sunday show know this is a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, of motorists need to be cautious of and conscious of bicycles that are out there. But if we're sharing the street, we have to share the same rules also. This terrible story that we reported on the news today about this 20-year-old woman who was driving a Divvy bike and was killed, actually, this morning in the Avondale neighborhood at the corner of Belmont and Sacramento. According to the reports in the Tribune, both the bicycle and this vehicle were making a right-hand turn. I don't know anything about this accident any more than that, but I do know this. I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions on this poor woman who was killed today in any way. I don't want to cast aspersions on all bikers in any way, but I know that if you're in the street, you need to follow the same rules that everybody else does. You can't make a right-hand turn. You've zagged into to the left of me while I'm in the right lane and make a right-hand turn in front of me. That's a recipe for disaster. I see bicycles all the time just shooting through red lights, almost getting hit by cars who have the right of way.
Right.
They've got the green light. You don't expect something to just shoot out of nowhere like that. There has to be more respect. Same if somebody, I mean, I don't know, do we know, is it legal to ride on the sidewalk? 312-981-7200. I would be curious of people who understand the bike rules more. But somebody who's out walking their dog shouldn't be in fear of their life.
I know.
Because somebody's being careless.
And, you know, this is in the suburbs. I know sometimes on a summer night, kids are going to ride down the sidewalk, but there's no traffic at that time. I'm telling you, when I learned how to ride a bike after I accused all the trees of running into me, I couldn't wait to graduate from the training wheels on the sidewalk to the street. I couldn't wait. And you know what? I'm scared of the big cars on the street.
Right. Yeah. There practically isn't a day when I'm driving on the streets, and I think I'm a pretty careful driver. I'm especially careful now that most of my driving is in the city.
You have to pay attention.
A lot of the lane configurations now have changed in the city, where it'll be a lane for the cars, a lane for the bikes, and now a parking lane or another lane to drive in is on that side. It's not like the bikers are all the way to the side on the right anymore.
Right.
Some streets.
Correct.
Some streets are. So it's a little bit confusing if you're driving in the city. You got to be super extra careful with all of that. But even still, I'll bet you once or twice a week, I have a close call with somebody. And I'm not saying that I'm the greatest driver in the world. I am pretty careful. But 9 times out of 10, it's a biker who thinks that they are apparently the only vehicle on the road and that nothing can happen to them. I'm in a car. You're in a bike. I'm probably going to win.
I know.
If we have a collision.
And why wouldn't that frighten you? Just a couple of weeks ago, we were walking out at lunch, and somebody had rented a couple of Divvy bikes, and they were flying down the sidewalk in front of Tribune Tower. And I said on the air, should they be on the sidewalk? Kevin, you have some information on the bicycling on the sidewalk?
Yeah, this is from cityofchicago.org. Chicago law prohibits biking on a sidewalk if you are 12 years or older, unless it is marked as a bike route.
So all there right. You go, City of Chicago. I mean, this didn't happen in the city per se for you last night.
No, but I'm going to look at the LaGrange law.
But I'll bet it's got to be pretty similar, that if you're not a little kid, then you should be on the street.
All right, well, maybe we're going to start a movement before my husband's paralyzed and the dog is killed.
The Jimmy Mack Bicycle Foundation.
Hey, the museum's not coming to town, the George Lucas Museum, so he needs something to do.
He needs something to distract him from his sadness.
We'll take a quick break. And really, if you are on a bicycle, even if you have a helmet, which I don't see a lot of people wearing helmets on a bicycle.
I probably see about half and half.
All right, well, it should be all, because really, if you're driving next to a car and you cut off a car, the car's going to win pretty much every time.
Yep.
312-981-7200. It's Dean Richards. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. Hey, look who it is. It's Dean Richards sitting in for Bill Leff, who's celebrating his 25th anniversary today with his wife, Terry. And we're talking about bicycle riders who are not abiding the law.
It's this story today is just so sad about this woman who was a Divvy bike rider. It's believed to have been the first fatality on a bike ride share bike. I don't know if that means that much about it, but it's at least the third or fourth story in as many weeks of a biker who was either hit and critically injured or killed as a result of cars and bicycles colliding on the roads. And I just think that, you know, certainly the city's got, you know, tons of huge problems. But this is also one of them where we don't insist that the bikers follow the rules of the road. And I believe that they're supposed to do that.
And, I mean, wouldn't you just be afraid of getting killed? I mean, their cars are bigger. And I think you're supposed to adhere to the rules of the road.
Yeah, I think
like
that's
a driver
the law.
Is.
I think that is the law. Have you driven on a bike? Have you rode a bike in the streets lately as an adult? Because I hadn't in a long time. And then I did. And I said, I'm never going to do this again in the street, because I felt too vulnerable. I felt like I'm a sitting duck out here, because then I was like, these crazy people in their cars.
It's like a game of Frogger when you're on a bike. I haven't ridden a bike in the city, and I don't think I would. That would scare me. I'm just a suburban girl, and even that, I don't like riding my bike anymore. I prefer a car where I'm protected.
Exactly.
Pat, what happened with a bicyclist and you?
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Dean. I listen to you. Dean, I watch you every morning.
Thank you.
And whatever. I love you guys. Anyways, similar situation, Wendy, like your husband had. We're in the suburbs. We're actually up in Boone Town. But anyways,
it's on the map. Look it up.
Boone Town.
What?
We're looking it up to see where Boone Town is.
Oh, McHenry, Johnsburg, Fox River.
All right.
Beautiful area.
Barney's Island.
Oh, I've been there.
Okay.
That's
anyways.
What I sounded like when I was there, too. All right, go ahead, Pat.
No, but anyways, my husband was parallel parking. He was a quarter of the way, maybe a third of the way into the spot. And this bicyclist comes along. I swear he was going 35 miles an hour. I'm exaggerating. Whatever. He did not yield to us and whacked the back of my car, put a big dent, like a karate chop dent in there.
And did she fly off her bike at all?
No, he didn't. It was a he, and he just kept going.
He didn't even stop to go, oh, my God, what did I do? Oh, sorry about the dent.
No, because he thought we were in the wrong. And like Dean said, shouldn't they be abiding to the same rules
right.
of the road that we do?
They didn't stop. The guy didn't stop because he knows that there's no repercussion. If you know, that's basically a hit and run, right?
It is.
If there was anything else, it's a hit and run.
You damage someone else's property, yeah. You should report it.
But because of this mentality that bikers can do whatever they want, I'm just going to hit your car and dent it and keep going.
Right, but we were so excited to be able to go see a Hawks game that, you know what, oh well. You know, we'll have it sucked out, the dent. But it's still there, and it is a karate chop dent.
It's unfortunate and it's annoying.
Cars are, but
yeah, but I mean, you know, thank goodness it was only a dent. You know, these terrible stories that happen seemingly with more frequency now, where people are being very seriously injured, paralyzed, left quadriplegic, and the story today of the woman dead because I have no idea who was at fault, what happened here. I just know that a vehicle and a bicycle collided, and guess who won?
The vehicle. Pat, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Harold is an active bicyclist. So you ride your bike a lot, and what do you have to say about this?
Yeah, I have several bikes. What I was going to say is I pull up to a light changes. I mean, if I get stuck, it's just like a car, you're going and it turns yellow, and you're already a quarter of the way through, you're just going to try and get through so you don't get, you know, T-boned or something. But if I'm coming up and there's a red light, I stop, and this happens all the time, and I yell at the bike guys because I'm like, you guys are going to get us, you know, you're going to get make it look bad for us. The police are going to start, you know, cracking down on everybody.
Rules of the road, Harold, when you're riding a bike?
I try to. I mean, you know, I try to. I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I, you know, I'm not going to go at North Avenue and Halsted and just try to zigzag through a red light just so I can get to the other side. I'm going to pull up and stop at light and wait till it changes. But so often I'll see somebody like the other day, I'm headed southbound and there's cars sitting at the light next to me. And in the northbound lane, heading southbound is a bike, you know, he's doing 20 and he gets to the light, doesn't slow down or anything. He just zigs right in front of the car next to me, in front of me, and then zigs through traffic, almost getting hit by a couple cars going each way.
See, but that is a death wish to me. I'm not going to say they deserve to be hit, but you are playing a game of roulette right there. I mean, you've got to stop when the light is red.
Why would you? Yeah, I mean, you know, why would you do that? But some people do, and it irritates me because, you know, people complain to me. You know, it's like, speaking of divvy bikes, and I don't know if this girl had any fault, if it was her fault or the truck's fault. And I feel bad whenever I hear that somebody died. But yesterday I was going to the beach, you know, not going to the beach, but passing the beach, and I was riding on the bike path on the lakefront. And you go over a bridge that goes over the river by along underneath Lakeshore Drive, and I pull up to Illinois Street, and there's a light. So I pull up and stop, and this girl on the divvy bike, she pulls up, and she slows down, and then she looks, and there's no cars coming, so she just blows the red light. And I says, you know, I wonder who – I mean, what happens when you're on a rental bike and you get into an accident? Does the family sue the divvy or
that's a great question. Bike,
you know, if you wreck the divvy bike, does divvy go after you? Or I don't know, does divvy – Divvy's insurance pay for your hospital bills if you live or whatever? I don't know what happened.
Right. I mean, you know, and also the part of the story will be what kind of shape was the bike in?
Well, there's a picture of it kind of.
It's pretty mangled up. Yeah. I mean, there's a picture in ChicagoTribune.com. This bike, it looks like it must have been hit with a pretty good velocity. It's the wheels are all bent up. The frame is bent in half on top of it. So it opens up a can of worms with this, but the bottom line of this is, you know, if I were a biker, I think I just would err on the side of caution. It doesn't sound like a lot of people do.
And it's not worth it. Thank you, Harold, for calling. We appreciate it. And Tony's got, you got 30 seconds to defend yourself, Tony.
Okay, real quick. I'm a bicyclist, ride to work all the time. The problem with us bicyclists is that, you know, bad drivers are on the road. I've had things thrown
Dean.
At me. I've had people throw stuff at me.
Oh.
I obey the road laws. But, you know, and some people purposely swerve into our direction just because they think it's funny. They hate bicyclists. And yes, I understand there are bad bicyclists that give us a bad name, like bike messengers and all that. But not
I'm sure there's two good
people.
Bike messengers out there listening.
Two out of 100.
There's room for improvement on both sides.
There is, and you got people
of all of
you
us
know,
for sure. But you know,
but some people don't know. Like I keep thinking of my mother when she was driving. She didn't know to give two cars length behind a motorcycle. She wouldn't know to watch out for a bike. And why should you? If you know you see a bike on the side of the road riding the bike, you should go. Okay, they're going to stay over to the side. I'm going to go about my business. They shouldn't be darting in front of cars.
Right. You know that takes place with a lot of the bikers, right?
Tony? Oh, yeah, totally. And I agree with you guys that they should be, the cops should take care of them, give them tickets or whatever. But at the same time, it just sometimes we feel like we're being attacked even though we're following the rules of the road.
Yeah, well, if people are throwing things at you and, you know, purposely darting around you, I would just move to a friendlier neighborhood.
Take their plate number and make, you know, honest to God, call like 311 and say this car lunged at me.
Right, unless you notice a bald man driving. Then just chalk it up to crazy Uncle Dean's out again.
Tony, thank you so much for calling. How would they make, and this is, I'm sorry, because there are some great bike messengers out there, but there are some that don't match with what they're wearing. Would their punishment be they have to wear matching clothes?
You're going to make this like a wardrobe punishment?
Yes.
Wow.
Because they do a lot of plaids and stripes and polka dots all together. It's like, no, you have to wear a monochromatic theme.
I'm gonna make you wear a suit today. Three-piece suit. Now get this over to LaSalle Street, stat.
All right, well, be careful out there because the cars, you know, are bigger.
Cars are going to win every time.
Every time.
I promise.
After the news, we're going to talk to Judd Surratt. A lot of NHL activity going on today, and I want to ask him if Andrew Shaw is back yet. I'm just going to ask him every time we talk to him. Yes. Judd Surratt coming up, and news next here on 720 WGN. It's coming, Dean. October 12th. Are you ready for your first Hawks game?
I am ready and excited.
Oh, me too.
They're well rested. They're well rested this year.
This is the year.
This is my way of justifying that they didn't win the Stanley Cup this year. They're so rested now.
Judd Surratt will attest to that. It's pretty hard to win back-to-backs.
Well, it hasn't been done in the National Hockey League since 97-98, and since they've instituted a salary cap in the league, it hasn't been done at all. So I know, Dean, you kind of say that in jest, but I think the fact that the Blackhawks will have a chance to finally rest and train and recover both emotionally and physically, that'll certainly pay some big dividends when the season starts October 12th.
Yeah, I've heard all these guys. I've heard Coach Q saying that of, you know, how they're able to have gotten a little more rest and relaxation before getting back down to work again. I heard Patrick Kane say it. I mean, yeah, I've heard a lot of the players talking about that. And, you know, so, I mean, I sort of say it in jest, but I think it's sort of true at the same time.
Oh, absolutely it is, because you have to factor in not only the fact that they've played deep into the playoffs for many years here on this run, but a lot of these guys have also played some extra hockey in the Olympics, and that also is taxing to a lot of the key players on the Blackhawks. They don't have to worry about that. They'll be rested and ready to go. And now, all of a sudden, the Blackhawks have added a top four defenseman on a one-year deal for just over $2 million to continue to bolster the defense. And I think it's great because Brian Campbell coming back into the lineup, Wendy and Dean, this is a guy last year who led the Florida Panthers in minutes. He was a plus 31 on that team. He's a guy who can still run the power play, but he's such a veteran mobile puck mover who understands the coaching staff and the leadership core. And he's a hometown guy now, basically. He hails from the western suburbs, married a woman from out here. He's got a family out here. He talked about that being important. So he has an emotional vested interest in coming back. It's a great signing for the Blackhawks.
That's so funny to hear you calling him like the veteran pro, because I remember when he was just a young kid joining the team, sat in this very studio with Steve Cochran, just like this, you know, this fresh, untested kid who turned out to be phenomenal.
And now all of a sudden he's turned around and he's 37. He said he still has a lot left in the tank, Dean. He's a guy who is a gifted skater. And even watching him last year with the Florida Panthers, I don't think that that's really left him. And his ability to move the puck, which is even more important nowadays in the National Hockey League, so you spend less time in your own zone. The engine for this Blackhawks team, if you look since 2010, and really if you want to go back a year before that where they burst onto the scene, because that was Brian's first year, was their ability to charge that puck out of their own end, generate speed, generate momentum and velocity from the defensive end into the offensive zone. That was the key to the team for so many years, and they've shored that up.
All right, and Michael Roosevelt, number 32, has been signed to a deal, and Machinter.
Brandon Machinter is also back in the lineup, as is Michael Roosevelt. Listen, Rosie coming back, this is a guy who can fill in and play some veteran minutes as your sixth or seventh defenseman. But in a pinch, if you need him, he can move up and play in your top four or even top two, depending on what's going on. You can see the value in a guy like Michael Roosevelt. He is trusted by the coaching staff and by management. But again, at 37, he's not asked to play big minutes, but just to fill in every now and then. If he can give you anywhere from 10 to 15 good minutes on a night-in, night-out basis, I don't think anybody expects Michael to play 82 games, but if he can give you 70 games playing a solid 10 to 15 minutes per night, and it's not a lot, that has a lot of value, and he's giving it to you for about the minimum in the National Hockey League.
Okay, and Andrew Shaw signed a deal, so is he going to be coming back here in 6 years?
Well, we'll see when he gets to the end of that deal. And if you can see some of the term, Wendy and Dean, that's been kind of passed around with Andrew Shaw getting a really long-term deal with the Montreal Canadiens. I don't know if you saw the deal that Andrew Ladd signed. I think he signed for 7 years and about $38 million with the New York Islanders. The Blackhawks just could not match up that type of term and that type of money. But since you bring that up, I started looking at the Dallas Stars. This is Patrick Sharp's last year coming up in 16-17. This will be his last year on that contract that the Blackhawks signed him to. Hmm. And you wonder, where will he play at the start of the 17-18 season? Going back to the Detroit Red Wings, when they were in that dynasty run from 97 to 98 in the early 2000s and then capped in 2008, they were able to add a lot of veteran players to come in on one-year deals because they wanted a crack at another championship. And you wonder, down the line, 2 years from now, could Patrick Sharp be back in the fold?
That's pretty interesting. So Shaw goes to Montreal, and then someone very important to the Montreal Canadiens is going to Nashville. I'm going to Nashville next week.
Well, that's another trade. Since you talk about some of the changes in the division, and there are some significant ones, the Nashville Predators traded their captain, a guy named Shea Weber, in exchange for P.K. Subban, who is an explosive offensive defenseman, but as defensively in his own zone, he can be a wild card. And he's a different personality. I think he will be a big-time star in that city, in Music City, in Nashville, and we'll see how he plays back in his own end and how reliable he is. But it certainly makes it a lot easier. If you're a veteran skilled forward or a top nine forward that's playing in the Central Division, you don't have to contend with a guy like Shea Weber, who is nasty and big and physical, and he has a booming shot, as does Subban. The other thing, if you kind of keep your eyes out, the St. Louis Blues have gone through some significant change here in the last 24 hours. David Backes and Troy Brouwer are both gone. They pick up a guy named David Perron. Now, they're still pretty deep up front, but their identity was this big, heavy team, and the two guys that really epitomized that were Backes and Brouwer. They're gone.
I've heard a lot of the trades that have gone on, and this is where the salary cap starts rearing its ugly head, if you will.
Well, yeah, you've got to make some difficult choices, and down the road they have another kid named Kevin Shattenkirk, who I think we mentioned the other day when we were on. The word is that I don't think Kevin wants to stay in St. Louis, nor do I think that the Blues can afford him, so he's under contract for one more season. Whether or not he actually starts the year with St. Louis, I think he will end up starting the season with St. Louis, but depending on how things go, this is probably his last year there. The other team that made some fascinating moves were the Minnesota Wild. They picked up Eric Staal, who maybe about 5 or 6 years ago was one of the premier centermen in the National Hockey League. But here in the last few years, and maybe some of that is because of the team that he was playing on, his game has really fallen off. But if he's able to play the middle, he is a big body who can do some gifted things. He's a valuable leader. Minnesota's also going through a coaching change. They brought in Bruce Boudreau, who had a lot of regular season success with the Anaheim Ducks and the Washington Capitals. So that's something that is worth watching. I think that Minnesota has gotten bigger, but I think they've also gotten a little slower.
And I always wonder if Shattenkirk is a fan of Star Trek, because he's got like William Shatner and Captain Kirk, Shattenkirk, both in his name. I often wondered that.
Did you break into Rose Carnival Wagon?
No, I don't know where
it
is.
You started early. It is July 4th, and you know, all the best to you and everybody else on July 4th weekend. But have you started a little early, Wendy?
No, I have not. I'm going to see SpongeBob the Musical tonight with my kids, so I'm keeping it sober till afterwards.
And we
my
have
girls
this.
Went to see it last night. They loved it.
There you go. Did they wear shorts?
Yeah,
you were listening to the show 4 hours ago. That'll make sense.
I was wondering if my kids could wear shorts because it is a musical. It's musical theater, and I'm thinking, can I bring in teenage boys? Can they wear shorts?
Well, maybe that's appropriate because I think the stage is Bikini Bottom, right?
All right, but what did your kids wear? Formal wear?
No, they didn't wear formal wear. It's SpongeBob. Who lives in Pineapple Under the Sea? What are you doing?
Okay.
Shattenkirk.
Okay, you're starting.
You
to, okay, you're starting now. Now, who's in the Carnival wagon?
Yeah, really.
Oh, I wish. they had pants and a short sleeve shirt on last night, and they were actually very fortunate. They went with their drama and music teacher, and they actually got a backstage look. They had a chance to meet some of the signature players, some of the people who were playing some of the lead parts. So they loved it.
Did they do any play by play like their dad does?
I'll have to ask my wife. I did not attend. You know, there was a big viewing of the Cub game, and Dean, you'll appreciate this. I watched Bottle Rocket last night.
Oh, very good.
I had to take that in while my wife went downtown with my girls.
Very good.
Awesome. I think we have one quick question before we let you go, and this is Jimmy on the line. Jimmy, Judd Surratt, we're talking hockey.
What's up, Jimmy? Good afternoon, everybody. Happy 4th of July weekend. Real quick, Judd, Blackhawks are in the same situation again. We need a third line center. What's the possibilities of getting Antoine Vermette or a person of that caliber back? I'll listen up. You all have a great holiday weekend.
You too, Jimmy.
I was just going to ask that same question.
All right, thanks for jumping on. I don't know that the Blackhawks are necessarily in the market for that type of player. In listening to Stan Bowman talk on the conference call right after the transaction was made, I think when you're looking at a lot of the bottom six players, he's expecting maybe six or seven guys will have opportunities to earn a spot with the Blackhawks, and that will all determine what type of camp they have, how they play early in the preseason. But I think when it comes to some of the players in the bottom six, and the way that the Blackhawks are sort of lined up down the middle, where you've got Taves, Anisimov, Kruger, the way they fill in, and then you've got a kid named Dennis Rasmussen, who I think can come in. He's a big-bodied guy who has a little bit of skill to his game. He's very reliable. I think the Blackhawks are fairly set down the middle. What do they look like on the wings? What does that four-line rotation look like? Are they able to achieve the balance that was so elusive for them last year? If they're able to do that, then I think they have another great chance to win a Stanley Cup.
It's going to happen. I feel it. Judd, have a great weekend.
All right, you too, guys. Thanks.
See you, Judd.
Judd Surratt. He knows his stuff, doesn't he?
He is.
You know more.
Super. I have no idea. I understood about four words of that whole thing, to be honest with you. But he's super enthusiastic and cool that there's some stuff going on. It does get you excited about October.
Absolutely. I have just really turned into a rabid Blackhawks fan. We have to take a quick break, come back. Again, I'd like to thank you for sitting in for Bill, but I'll thank you in a minute, all right?
Are you kicking me out early?
Well, no. Well, thank you. And it's an extensive thank you.
I guess so.
All right. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Dean Richards at 720 WGN.
Starting to get posts on my Facebook page and on my Twitter, people headed to Soldier Field getting ready to see Guns N' Roses tonight. The show's not till 8 o'clock, but people are getting there, you know, super early, I guess, to hang out, to party, to
tailgate,
and anticipating you know, trouble getting downtown, you know, long delays and stuff getting out of town because there is a lot of construction. And you would know this better than I would, but it seems super busy on Michigan Avenue to me right now, just of, you know, the amount of foot traffic that's down here. So I would guess, like, if somebody's coming down to Soldier Field for the show, allow yourself a little bit of extra time.
Like four extra hours.
Yeah. I realize I sound like Wally Phillips making it the announcement. Like, the Carpenters are going to be at Gulf Mill. Better allow yourself some extra.
Well, I have
for all of you youngsters out there going to see Guns N' Roses.
You know, I heard Mary Vandeveld this morning say that traffic wasn't so bad because I thought, you know, people aren't working today and a lot of offices closed early today. I think ours did at 1 o'clock. Oh, shoot, we could have left at 1. Darn it, I forgot about that. But now I'm hearing travel times that are up there. I'm going home and I'm coming right back to see the SpongeBob
musical. Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm surprised you're just not staying down here for that.
I got to pick up my kids.
They can't hop on a train?
They're teenage boys. They'll never make it here. They'll get off in Berwyn or something.
Teenage boys are pretty resourceful.
Not when they're together.
For SpongeBob? Separate.
Separate, they could make it, but together they'll stop together. At Connie's in Berwyn for a banana split on the way.
That makes sense.
You are on Sunday, correct?
I am. I'll be here Sunday morning with our interview that we did this week with Steven Spielberg. I did not give his new movie, The BFG, the greatest review in the world. It's still a delightful conversation. He's a very, very charming, wonderful man. And you'll hear what he has to say about the film. I liked it. I didn't love it. So we'll talk about that on Sunday morning. And also, don't forget that on Monday night, I will be hosting the Navy Pier fireworks that will be broadcast on WGN Channel 9. We're going to be out at Navy Pier Live. We'll show you the fireworks show, honestly, before the fireworks and after. I really don't have much of a clue what we're doing, which I think could mean that it could be super entertaining, not knowing precisely what's going to be going on. But that's going to be a Monday night, 4th of July at 9:30. So when you're done with your barbecues and your fireworks and all that sort of thing, pop over to the Big Number 9, and we'll have that for you. Also, I should also just mention, yesterday morning on the TV morning news, I was doing some grilling segments. They have me doing these grilling segments now because I like to cook, and we had some really cool recipes of pizzas on the grill yesterday. This amazing eggplant parmesan salad.
Whoa.
That is so delicious and so refreshing, so different for 4th of July barbecue. It's all up on WGNTV.com, and I think it's on my Facebook page. But if you're looking for some really cool recipes for your holiday weekend, check those out as well.
And our producer, Kevin Richter, is teaming up with Michael Heidemann. They'll be on the air tonight. You're going to do a quick turnaround and come back from 2 to 5 a.m. tonight into tomorrow morning, right, Kevin?
That is correct.
What's on the show tonight?
Us and things and music.
All right. I'm in.
He promotes the show as well as Bill and I do.
Set your alarm clocks. Don't miss a minute.
Happy 4th, Dean. Thank you so much for hanging out.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. All right. Back to find out who's in for Rokon next on 720 WGN.